Good evening. We have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. My name is Michael Fee. I'm honored to serve as your moderator for this second and hopefully last night of Sudbury's annual town meeting for 2017. How many people were here last night? Excellent. Thanks for coming back. Town clerk tells me that we had nearly 500 people here last night. We have an equally exciting slate of articles to deal with tonight, and hopefully we'll have a similar turnout. Let's address a few housekeeping matters before we take up Article 16. Despite Mr. Fox's stellar service as assistant moderator last night, he's unable to be with us tonight due to a very important prior engagement, Celtics game. And I've asked long-term Sudbury resident Water District moderator and sometimes assistant moderator here, Bob Coe, to serve as second assistant moderator. Is Bob here? I don't see him. Okay. Who wants to volunteer to be the second assistant moderator? Can I get a volunteer? Beth Quirk. Okay. Can I have a motion to appoint Beth Quirk as the second assistant moderator for tonight? Okay. Does that receive a second?
Second.
All in favor? All opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Quirk. Don't put the pressure on me. Okay, as a reminder, fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in the front through the stage. Bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit doors, as well as outside the cafeteria. There's no snack table tonight. Sorry, Girl Scouts they don't do back-to-back. Thanks again to Scout Troop 63 and Troop Leader Peter Fishman. We have running the microphones tonight Gavin Montero, Parker Simon, Nolan Schlesman, Ben Liza, Teddy Liza, Colin Hay, Jen Howry, and Andrew Mossy. Thank you, gentlemen. Protecting us tonight, police officers Jim Espinoza, John Longo, and Ken Lawyer. Thank you, gentlemen. And thanks always to Sudbury TV, Lynn Puro, Matt Cranson, Terry Lockhart, and Cliff McGann, who routinely harangues me after every town meeting that I should have done this or that differently. But I know he means well. As well as tonight's volunteers, Chris McDermott and Antonio Fontes. Thanks also to Kathleen Dwyer, our off-site stenographer, who is providing closed caption transcription services to help make these proceedings more accessible to people who need that. As a reminder, you can live stream the closed captions on your mobile phone or tablet by going to www.sudbury.ma.us/townmeeting/captions. Thanks also to the LS Environmental Club for providing us all with these nifty water bottles. Appreciate it. Okay, so we have 20 articles remaining, four of which have been withdrawn or are slated for indefinite postponement. We got through 15 articles last night, including a budget override. I don't see any reason why we can't conclude our business this evening. And please remember, if we are able to conclude our business this evening, the town manager has promised us an onstage victory dance that should not be missed.
You don't want to miss this.
Okay, so let's get to it. Article 16, Goodenough Library Charter Amendment. Who's here for a motion? Ms. Pryor? Speak into it a little bit.
Barbara Pryor, 221 Knobscot Road. I'm the vice chair of the Goodenough Library Trustees, and the Goodenough Library Trustees would like to move to indefinitely postpone Article 16, the Goodenough Library Charter Amendment.
Does that receive a second? It does. Anyone wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 16? I see no one. This requires a majority vote. All those in favor of motion under Article 16, raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 17 is to amend the zoning bylaw, Article 9, by adding a new Section 4800, temporary moratorium on marijuana establishments. Motion by Ms. Brown.
Move to add a new Section 4800 to the zoning bylaw, Article 9, as stated in the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. On November 8, 2016, there was a ballot question on every municipality's ballot concerning the marijuana use and marijuana establishments in municipalities. That passed. Since then, there has been concerns from municipalities and the state in regards to implementation and enforcement. The new law not only authorizes the personal use of marijuana for those 21 and older, but also allows for marijuana retail in manufacturing establishments. The law allows municipalities to regulate in two ways. We could do a bylaw regulating the time, place, and manner of operations of marijuana establishments in a manner which is reasonably practicable. Reasonably practicable means in a way that will not interfere with the viability of the business. The town also has the option to do a ballot question prohibiting or limiting the number of establishments within the municipality. A bill was signed in January delaying certain parts of the law. Retail shops will not be able to open until July 2018 rather than in January. At this time, the state is still drafting regulations for the implementation of the law. The law allows municipalities to, as a local option, impose an additional local sales tax up to 2%. As of April 1st, 5 communities have approved moratoriums and 1 community took action to ban. 70 communities are considering action this spring. There is indication that there could be further changes to the law, but that is still unclear. A zoning moratorium allows the town to impose reasonable time limitations on development so that the town can engage in a legitimate planning study. It must be limited in time and in scope, and we are proposing June 30, 2018. West Bridgewater had a moratorium for the same time frame that has been approved by the Attorney General already. During this moratorium, the town, through the Board of Selectmen and the Planning Board, will study and explore how to best place local controls and regulate under the new law. At a future town meeting or town election, a bylaw would be considered. So tonight we are only voting on a moratorium which would not allow these retail establishments to open in Sudbury during that time. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee has no opinion on this article.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Because this is a zoning amendment, I need a report from the Planning Board. Someone from the Planning Board to report on this, please. Mr. Hebert.
The Planning Board supports this article.
Thank you. Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 17? Questions or comments about Article 17? Anyone? Right here.
Hi, I'm Lydia Pastuzik, 15 Griffin Lane. I'm not a pothead, but I do have a few comments. If part of this is tied into whether you voted yes or no on the referendum, but one of the reasons I support the legalization of marijuana is that we'll have a regulated product that is being used. And right now, the only way to get this product is through drug dealers or with a medical marijuana card. So I'm not opposed to the idea of having retail establishments in town. I think the timing with when the state is going to promulgate regulations and when we would have a moratorium until is a little sketchy. I mean, I think if we're going to impose a moratorium, impose it for like another year. Otherwise, it's almost coterminous with what the state is proposing. But I don't think it's necessary to do this zoning amendment. I do think that if we end up with retail establishments, I mean, there's not a huge market. We're a small town. But it would eliminate, if people who want to use recreational drugs can go get it legally and get a regulated product, it would eliminate possibly sketchy people selling street drugs to our kids. So I kind of have a different view on it.
Okay, thank you.
Also, we have a lot of agriculture in Sudbury, so maybe this fits with, you know, all those greenhouses. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else wish to be heard on Article 17? Right here in the back. Wait for a mic, please.
John Reardon, Pendleton Road. I have an amendment I'd like to offer.
The rules of offering an amendment are that you must deliver it to me in writing in triplicate.
Okay, I guess I can't do it.
So why don't we do this? Why don't you give your amendment, give three copies of your amendment to the scout. He'll bring it down. We'll look at it. In the meantime, we'll take some more comments. And then we'll come back to you.
I have one copy. I can quickly write out the other two. It's just a strike language amendment.
Why don't we start with the first copy? Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 17? Questions, comments, or concerns about Article 17? Okay, give me a minute with this amendment. Okay, Mr. Reardon, I've consulted with town council, and we both agree that your proposed amendment is within the scope. Have you succeeded in writing another copy of it? Okay, you do that, and you deliver that to the clerk. I'm going to give mine to the technology administrator, and he's going to put it up on the view graph. But please, everyone, if you want to offer an amendment, it's very clearly stated in the warrant that it's necessary to deliver three copies to the moderator and the clerk and the technology administrator prior to your making your motion so that we don't waste time, okay? Can you hand that? He hasn't. It would be a valid amendment if seconded. So I'm going to allow him to come up here and make the motion to amend. And if it gets a second, he can give a presentation.
Yeah,
hang on. We're going to do this motion to amend right now. Sorry. Hang on. Mr. Reardon, are you ready to present on this? Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
No, I want you to come down here, please. Yes. Okay, thanks. Okay. That's for you. Okay. Mr. Reardon, can you take a look up on the view screen, and does that reflect your motion accurately?
Yes.
Okay. So now you can make a motion to amend Article 17. And what you say is, I move to amend Article 17, and then you read exactly what's up on the view screen.
I move to amend Article 17, Section 4830, strike the following language. Or until such time, it's in the second sentence, or until such time as the town adopts zoning bylaw amendments that regulate marijuana establishments, whichever occurs earlier.
Does that receive a second? I'm not seeing any. Okay, that does receive a second. Okay, Mr. Reardon, presentation, please. You have 5 minutes, sir.
I won't need 5 minutes, but the language I would propose to strike was to put a time limit on the amount of time that the town would have to consider the moratorium or have to impose the moratorium. The way the language is written now, it could be 3, 5, 7 years, depending on the pace at which the town itself decides to consider zoning bylaw amendments. And I really believe that we should set a definitive time limit and we should have action on this. I decided to leave it at June 30th, 2018. I think that that's more than a year from the present time, and it should be sufficient time with the action pending with the legislature to make a decision on how we want to move on regulating marijuana establishments in Sudbury. So the purpose is simply to put a fixed time limit and not leave this totally open-ended, which could drag on for years. So that was the purpose of the amendment.
Okay, thank you, sir. Does anyone wish to be heard on the amendment, the motion to amend? Right here.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. The way I read this, the sentence would say that the moratorium shall be in effect through June 30th, 2018. That's your limit. And what's being struck out is, or at such time as the town adopts the zoning bylaw amendments that regulate marijuana establishments, whichever occurs earlier. So, but it would seem to me that what's being taken out here is the possibility that a zoning bylaw at, say, annual town meeting next year, which would be earlier than June 30th, 2018, is not in the picture anymore.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion to amend? I see no one. Okay. In order to, you're going to vote on the motion to amend, and it needs a majority vote to pass. So all those in favor of the motion to amend, please raise your cards. All those opposed, the motion to amend fails to gain a majority and therefore fails. Back to the main motion under Article 17. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the main motion? Questions or comments for the town manager regarding the main motion under Article 17? I see no one. This is a, we're going to vote. This is a zoning article. It requires two-thirds majority to pass. All those in favor of the main motion under Article 17, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes by well more than two-thirds majority. Article 18. Amend town bylaws, Articles 18, licenses and permits subject to unpaid taxes and fees. Motion by Susan Giuliano.
Move to amend town bylaws, Article 18, licenses and permits subject to unpaid taxes and fees, as stated in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by town manager Melissa Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This should be an easy one.
Okay.
We talked a lot last night about the Municipal Modernization Act, sometimes called the Municipal Reform Act, and we learned that there were several housekeeping items that we needed to do tonight and last night to now comply with the new state law. So the Municipal Reform Act changed the statutory requirements dictated in this law, and now the town needs to change the bylaw to comply with the new state law. So this is a comparison. The old bylaw required the tax collector to annually furnish to any license or permit granting authority within the town, so anybody like giving a liquor license, a building permit, etc., a list of persons or businesses who had unpaid taxes or fees. And you had to have neglected to pay for more than a 12-month period, and it did not apply to people who had an abatement pending. The new law requires the tax collector to still annually do that, but also allows them to periodically send updated listings. So if someone has paid, they could be removed from the list. They also allow the tax collector to include parties on the list who are less than 12 months late. So if someone's 9 months late or 11 months late, they could be included. It still only applies to people who do not have an abatement application pending. So again, we're just doing a bylaw change to conform with the new state law. Thank you.
Okay. Finance Committee.
Finance Committee offers no opinion on this article.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
I don't need planning board on this, correct? Discussion. Who wants to be heard on the Article 18 motion? Does anyone wish to be heard on under Article 18? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the main motion under Article 18, raise your cards. All those opposed? That is nearly unanimous, but certainly well more than a majority, and as a result, Article 18 passes. Article 19, amend town bylaws, Article 27.4, in-ground irrigation systems. Motion by Len Simon.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? There is a second. Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee offers no opinion on this article.
Board of Selectmen report.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Is there a Board of Health report? Okay.
The Board of Health.
Can you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Carol Bradford, Maple Ave, Board of Health member. Make a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 19.
Okay. Their motion's already been made, but do you have anything to say about it?
Bill Murphy, Health Director. There's currently state legislation pending that would grant the Energy and Environmental Office Secretary the authority to impose comprehensive restrictions in drought conditions, including private wells. So acting on a bylaw at this time wouldn't be appropriate. And also DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, is updating their model water restriction bylaw. And that should be considered as a more uniform approach and comprehensive approach to regulating water usage in drought conditions.
Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 19? Questions or comments on Article 19? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 19, raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes unanimously. And therefore, Article 19 passes. Article 20, amend zoning bylaw, Article 9, Section 1230, regarding conformance. Motion by Peter Abair, Chairman of the Planning Board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Peter Abair, 14 Dawson Drive, for the Planning Board. Move to amend zoning bylaw, Article 9, Section 1230, conformance as stated in the article.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Thank you. Mr. Abair.
This is similar to the Article 18 to bring our local zoning bylaw in conformance with the state law. Our current bylaw allows a building permit or special permit to be enforced for a period of 6 months should zoning at that subject property change. Last year, the state passed a Job Creation and Workforce Development Act, Chapter 219 of the Acts of 2016, which amended the state's Zoning Act, Chapter 40A, to extend this period of time to throughout the state to 12 months. The idea being giving that permit holder more security in obtaining financing for a project or gaining other approvals. So while our current bylaw reads 6 months, the state's 12-month period is actually in force in Sudbury, as it is in every other municipality in Massachusetts. This warrant would simply remove any confusion here in Sudbury and make our bylaw conform with the state's Zoning Act. The Planning Board supports this article.
Okay. Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee offers no opinion on this article.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
And I'll note for the record that the Planning Board supports the article. Discussion regarding Article 20. Anyone wish to be heard or have a question regarding Article 20? I see no one. This requires a two-thirds vote because it's a zoning bylaw amendment. All those in favor of the motion under Article 20, raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 20 passes. On to 21, DPW rolling stock replacement. Motion by Facilities Director Jim Kelly.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $182,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Does that receive a second? Thank you. Presentation by Dan Nason, DPW Director.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I just want to make note that the motion that Mr. Kelly made is a little bit different than what you see in the actual dollar value is a little different than what you see in the warrant article in front of you. It's actually $182,000. The $182,000 is the correct number value that differs from $175,000 that you currently see. The reason for that is it's an updated quote that we received. I'm not sure if you remember, this multi-purpose tractor was actually voted and approved at last year's town meeting. I, of course, was not here, but that's what I was told. It was approved at last year's town meeting, but it was voted down at the ballot for funding. So this is to fund a multi-purpose tractor. The reason it's called a multi-purpose tractor is it actually serves multi-purposes. It's used all different seasons. We're looking to replace a model year 2005, which is beyond its useful life expectancy of approximately 10 years. This is a specialty piece of equipment. It's used for snow blowing the sidewalks, sweeping the sidewalks, as well as plowing the sidewalks, and it actually has a boom flail attachment, which I'll get to in a moment. The current unit actually has a twisted cab. It was in a severe accident quite some time ago, and this is the best they could do to repair the vehicle, and the cab is still twisted. It has severe corrosion and rot throughout. Has a major current hydraulic leak that's going to cost an estimated $5,000 to repair, and over the past 3 years, it's seen over $15,000 in repairs. So there's a current photo of the unit to date. You can see in the left and right-hand photos here that there is severe corrosion on both sides where the doorways are. Again, the next photo is a little blow-up, and you can see on the right-hand photo under the driver's floor mat on the driver's side is actually severe rot. And then in these two photos, you can see on the left-hand side, I'm sorry, the last one's on the passenger side, on the driver's side of the vehicle, you can actually fit your palm through the entire floorboards. In fact, the center of it is so rotted that they actually have to put a no parking sign in there to cover it up. Another few photo shots, and here you can see in the detail where the twisted cab actually does not allow the door to close properly. And then in the short time that I took this vehicle out to take photos of it, you can see the hydraulic leak there. That was in a matter of minutes. We can't even really take this thing out to use it. We'd have to take a couple of gallons worth of hydraulic fluid with us. It's leaking so severely. So please, if there's any representatives from Holder and they're part of the company we're going to purchase this from, don't remember this presentation at all. So this is just an idea of what we'd be looking to replace it with. It's a similar new model, Holder brand or similar. Just shows you the snow throw attachment, the power angle plow, and then the broom attachments, which we sweep the construction areas as well as all the sidewalks, and then the boom flail mower as well, which we supplement the other mower they have for roadway maintenance. Mr. Moderator.
Thank you, sir. Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article by a vote of 5-3. Some members of the committee thought that the $10,000 to $15,000 of annual maintenance expense for the current sidewalk plow was reasonable, thus allowing the town to defer this $182,000 capital expense for one more year. However, the consensus of the committee was that the worn condition of the current equipment, and notably the hole which exists in its floor, warrants a recommendation to purchase a new sidewalk plow and mower.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Does the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee want to be heard on this? Anybody from there? Yes, sir, right here.
The CIAC supports this article.
Can you identify yourself, please?
Oh, Mark Howery, 55 Old Coach Road.
Thank you. Okay, discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 21? Questions? Comments? Right here in the back. Can we get a mic to her all the way in the back, please?
Sue Stein, 53 Stone Road. I just have a question. Does this also need to be approved by a town vote in addition to the town meeting?
I don't believe so.
Through the moderator? No, it's free cash.
It does not need to be approved by any vote other than what we're doing right now. Any other questions, comments on Article 21? Okay. I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 21, raise your cards. All opposed. That passes nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than the majority required. Article 22, purchase of a fire department ladder truck. Motion by Facilities Director Jim Kelly.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $670,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Chief Miles.
Mr. Moderator. My name is Bill Miles. I'm the fire chief here in Sudbury. Tonight I'm going to give everybody a little bit of a free education on ladder trucks, how we use them, and what the fire department would like to do as far as purchasing a new one. This is a picture of the ladder truck that we have now. It's a 1999, the words emergency one. They're the brand of the vehicle. It's been a good truck. We spend a lot of time and effort and a fair amount of money maintaining it, as we should. The vehicle is coming up on 20 years old. It serves two purposes. We call the ladder on top, we call that the stick, and this one also has a pump on the side. So it can function either as a ladder truck or as a pumper. The vehicle that we're looking to replace it with is a vehicle that is similar to this. We're looking to have a longer ladder. It would also have a little bit larger water tank, and it would also have a pump similar to the one we have now. So a lot of towns, small towns like ours, use a ladder-pumper combination due to staffing concerns. A big city like Boston on the right, they have enough personnel to send four people out on a ladder truck, another four people out on an engine. We certainly don't have that capacity here in Sudbury, so that's why we buy a combination vehicle. So a lot of times when you start talking about a ladder truck, if it's a 103-foot stick, I inevitably have someone point out to me that we don't have any 103-foot buildings in Sudbury, but that's not really the way we use ladder trucks. If you take a look at the picture on the left, that's pretty typical of the way trucks are used. You're not trying to reach up in the air so much as you are trying to reach horizontally. The truck on the right-hand side is a 105-foot stick, and you can see that's only a 36-foot tall house. But because the truck obviously can't park right next to the front door and put the stick up in the air, we're looking for the reach. This is a picture of the Wayside Inn fire that occurred in 1965, and the reason I put it up here is you can see the ground in front of the Wayside Inn, and that area where our old Engine 3 is parked there is not level. We wouldn't like to set a ladder truck up there, but you can see there's a ladder truck out in the driveway out here, and he's reaching with the stick. This picture shows the difference. We're looking to buy a 103-foot stick, but this is a good comparison shot. The longer ladder is 107 feet, ours would be 103, and the shorter ladder is a 75. So you can see there's quite a bit of difference there in the reach. We use ladder trucks in a lot of different ways. I think sometimes when people think about a ladder truck, they think of somebody hanging out a window and the fire truck rushes and makes a rescue, and that doesn't happen an awful lot, thankfully. This is a fire we had in December on Brimstone Lane, and we determined that it was too dangerous to send people inside of that building because the roof was a wood shingle roof and burning pretty violently, as you can see. So a typical ladder truck has what's called a ladder pipe, which we can set up quickly and put water on the fire. This fire occurred about a month later on 15 Whitetail Lane, not too far from here. As you can see, this is an attached garage, fully involved in flame. We wouldn't normally put a truck in the driveway because we don't want our new $1 million ladder truck to burn up. So we placed it in the cul-de-sac out here, And when I arrived at the fire, the ladder had not been extended to the house, so we were forced to use ground ladders. We had to wait till some mutual aid fire trucks came and personnel helped us throw the ground ladders. So after the fire was more or less out, I asked the ladder truck operator to put the stick out to the house, and he said, "Chief, it's not going to reach the house." I said, "Well, that's why I want you to put it out, because I can use this nice picture for an illustration at town meeting." So the point is it's not always a reach up in the air, is that this is a pretty typical house in Sudbury. The truck is parked right at the end of the cul-de-sac. We need to get the jack on some firm surface. So we could have certainly used another 8 to 10 feet in this situation. So we typically run our apparatus in Sudbury for 15 years on what we call the front line before we try to put it in reserve. This truck, as I mentioned, is a 1999. So if it were approved here tonight, we'd be ordering it about July 1st. We have the specifications already. There's about 80 pages of specifications here that we've already developed. So there's a 15 to 18-month manufacturing time, so we wouldn't see that truck for another year to 18 months. And I put down here at the bottom, good planning is always preferable to and cheaper than emergency acquisition. From time to time, if you go to the fire apparatus repair facilities, you'll see trucks that are beyond repair, and then fire departments are scrambling trying to find one. As I say, they're not made in weeks, they're made in months. So I think that this has been a good ladder truck for us, but I think it's time that we replaced it. So the reasons, the age of the truck, the decreased parts availability. Again, we use this ladder truck. We don't always need the ladder, but we use it at a fire engine. It responds out of our fire headquarters. We use it every day. A little bit safer for the personnel, has a few safety features that we would like to have. The big question, how much will it cost? The contract price is $1,030,199. The dealership has offered us a trade-in of at least $50,000. It could be more, but it won't be any less than $50,000. So the town meeting appropriation we're looking for is $670,000, and then we plan to use $325,000 of the mitigation money that was given to public safety by the National Development Company for the Meadowwalk project. So the difference between the $995,000 and the $981,999 is $14,000 or so. We plan to use that for extra equipment, and then any increase in the trade value we would also put towards additional equipment like radios, lettering, and equipment. Mr. Moderator.
Thanks, Chief. Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article by a vote of 7-1. The committee understands that the town's current ladder truck was placed into service in 1999 and will be 19 years old by the time this new piece of equipment can replace it. The committee supports the idea of providing our emergency response personnel with the reliable equipment that it needs to provide for the safety of those who reside in or visit our town. Although there was some discussion on alternate funding sources, the consensus of the committee was to recommend approval of this article.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Thank you. Mr. Howery, does the CIAC have a position on this article?
The CIAC supports this article.
Thank you, sir. Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 22? Questions or comments for the chief? Anybody wish to be heard? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor? I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Stop. Did I miss someone? Did someone wish to be heard? Right here. You wait. Whoa, whoa. We get a mic. Name and address, please.
My name is Rebecca Chizzo, and I live at 21 Whitehall Lane.
Can you say that one more time, please?
My name's Rebecca Chizzo, and I live at 21 Whitehall Lane.
Thank you.
There's nothing like being out at 12:30 at night on a freezing night with all your neighbors watching a house go down. If they did some heroic things, or my house would have also been in flames. So if they would have had just those few extra feet, maybe they could have stopped it before it got it totaled. The house has been totaled. So although I don't want higher taxes, I think there's some things we just can't ignore because it can happen to you. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I support it.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 22? Okay, this requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor? Thank you. All those opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 23.
Thank you very much.
Town and school rooftop HVAC capital repairs. Motion by the Facilities Director, Jim Kelly.
Move, in the words of the article, with a sum of $55,000 to be transferred from free cash.
It receives a second. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you, everybody. My name is Jim Kelly, Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. Here to present Article 23, Town and School Rooftop HVAC Capital Repairs. So as it says, this article is for $55,000 for the repairs of a few different rooftop HVAC units in some of our town buildings. There are two units at Curtis School, which each one of them approximately $15,000 to repair, a small unit at the senior center, which is actually a replacement. And then there's another big one at the Goodnow Library. I'll go through those. These are very expensive repairs, as you can see, but they're also very large units, and the replacement cost of these units are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you've heard rooftop units in the past few years, actually several years, but our buildings are getting older. I sound like a little bit of a broken record. But some of these things are wearing out. These are not worn out, but they are starting to show signs. So these repairs, although expensive, will prolong the life of these units and, you know, avoid a major replacement. We can put that off for a few more years. I will say that in my travels through the town roofs and our rooftop units, there's been really good maintenance, really good preventative maintenance. But again, some of these things, as I can hopefully show you in a picture, they do just, you know, get a little bit older. We all experience the same thing at our homes, and this article is just to support maintaining these. So this is a picture of the top of the Goodnow Library roof. It actually does have a flat roof. You wouldn't see that from the ground because the architect did a great job of hiding it. But these are the two big air conditioning, ventilation, heating units on the roof. 19 years old. Last year, we experienced some problems on, I think it was unit number one. Looking forward, good planning, just as the fire chief said, prevents sort of that emergency shutdown. We don't want that to happen. So looking at the unit, working with our service provider, we would like to plan ahead to be ready for these, anticipate these repairs ahead of time. Curtis School, this is the unit. There's actually two that look like this. These, again, the boxes, the fans, the belts, the motors, the ducts, they're okay. But as you can see on the right side, maybe, inside that unit, there's a coil and a pan, and water goes through all those things, collects and drains out. Well, that water over the past 17 years has pitted the pan, pitted the coil, and it's leaking. The roof isn't leaking, but the HVAC unit is leaking. Again, on the picture on the right, taken in, I see in the fall, as you can see, a beautiful fall day, when we were preparing to go through the process with this request, is the Curtis roof. On the left-hand side is truthfully what is above the ceiling at Curtis Middle School. That is a plastic pan. It's probably about 3 feet by 5 feet long. It's above the ceiling under the rooftop unit because it leaks. It leaks into the building. So this pan, thanks to the Yankee ingenuity of Joe Kay, collects the water, drains out of that hose into the janitor's slop sink. So it's been, that is a solution for now, but tonight is the solution that we look forward to. So I just put this slide in here to actually just sort of say thank you to the town. This is from our natatorium project in 2011. Still don't know why we didn't call it the pool, but the natatorium is the pool. But it's really meant to say thank you, because as a person who wants to be sure our buildings are safe, clean, cool, and warm when need be, we need to keep on top of these things. And going back then, this was supported. And on the right side, the picture in the way back in the corner is what the pool pack. That's our new unit. New was 5 or 6 years old. But when I go to that unit, I'm like, this is great. It works great every day, saving money, saving energy. So that's what that was for. And on a side note, I noticed the roof. You can see the roofers are repairing the Fairbank roof. They're doing a good job. So just in conclusion, a slide you've seen a couple times in the past is just showing you how many units we have in town. And every year I change the numbers. So we're keeping up with them. There's actually one that's not in here, which is the police station. Three big units. They're not actually on the roof, but they're in the attic, 1 year old and working great. So thank you very much.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously approves this article.
Mr. Howery, where does the CIAC stand on this?
The CIAC supports this article.
Excellent. How about some discussion? Who wants to be heard on Article 23? Any questions for Mr. Kelly? I'm sorry. Oh, right here. Thanks, Bob.
So you've had several free cash.
Name and address, please.
Sorry, Mara Houston, Peckham Road. We've had several free cash articles. We're going to have more. How much free cash do we have? How much will we have left over when all these various free cash articles are approved? And will that leave us with enough free cash?
Moderator, if I may?
You may.
Thank you.
Town manager.
Sure. So at the end of the night, after all of the articles.
Why don't you start with what we started with?
We started with, in the beginning, at the very beginning, when it was first certified, $3,074,985. Tonight, or yesterday night, we started with $2,641,750.
That was due to the appropriations at the fall town meeting, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. The town has a policy that we save 5% of the budget in our free cash. At the end of tonight, we will have that 5%, $471,989, and we will have an additional $86,870. So approximately $550,000.
Assuming all the free cash articles
Assuming
pass.
Assuming everything passes.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Houston? Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on this 25%. Article?
5%. Thank you.
Right, way in the back. Scout, please, can we get a mic down here? Thank you.
Shirley Hittig, 54 Wake Robin Road. I appreciate all of the attempts to make repairs so that replacement can be postponed. I'm wondering why these sorts of repairs are not included in the operating budget and why they continue to need to be appropriated from elsewhere. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Kelly, do you want to address that question? Do you want to address that?
Yes. Just the size of those repairs, $30,000 just for the repairs of the rooftops at Curtis, $17,000, $18,000, $19,000, more than we typically carry for maintenance. We do our preventive maintenance. These are sort of in the neighborhood of capital-like expenditures.
Okay. Does that address your question? Do you have a follow-up question?
I appreciate the extent of the repairs and the cost. But it seems to me, as you said yourself, sounding like a broken record, that you come back to us year after year for these equally large repairs. And I'm wondering if, knowing that these large repairs are going to come again and again, if it can't be worked into an operating budget that could be included in an override vote or in a regular budget vote.
Okay. Town manager, you want to take that one?
Sure. So as we go through this capital process, we meet with many different committees and commissions, one being Strategic Capital Funding Committee. I think I have that right. And they look at how we're going to fund our different capital needs. We all agree that we would like to fund more of these within the operating budget, and that's something that we'll be talking about over the next year. Currently, what we try to do is anything that's under $50,000 or that would be $100,000 over 2 years, we try to put into the operating budget. And that goes within the town manager's capital budget that we voted for last night. Anything that over $50,000, we typically introduce in this manner. But we all agree that it would be best if we could find a way to include that in the operating, and that's something that the Strategic Capital Funding Committee is working towards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Right here in the front. Can I get a scout with a mic right here, please? Just a second. Scouts, it's okay for you to walk all the way down in the front to hand it to him, okay? All right, sir.
Kurt Larson, 95 Water Row. I just want to point out that each one of these repairs is under $50,000. The only reason it's $55,000 in this article is through aggregation. So if your strategy is to bundle them up and to get over that $50,000 so you don't have to put them in the operating budget, that one doesn't pass the sniff test. So try not to come back to us with a big lump of aggregating things together to say you got it over the $50,000 rule that you're imposing. And get them in the operating budget, please.
Okay. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 23? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 23, raise your cards, please. All those opposed. That passes by well more than a majority. 24, town and school parking lots and sidewalk improvements. Motion by Facilities Director Jim Kelly.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $250,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Does that receive a second? Thank you. Presentation by Dan Nason, DPW Director.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I have to be honest, I also have a lot of tremendous respect for Mr. Jim Kelly because as I'm seeing his presentation up there, I'm a civil engineer, so I look at everything from the ground surface and below, and he's sitting up on all these parapet walls looking over the edge, which I really like his presentation because at the end of my presentation, you'll see photos that Jim took again sitting on the edge of the parapet wall looking down at the ground. So I'll let him do that, and I'll stick to the ground surface. So thanks, Jim. So tonight is talking about town and school parking lots. As Jim had said, the motion is for $250,000. There are multiple driveways and various facilities throughout town that are in dire need of repair. The request was for $250,000. $200,000 of that is for the Sudbury Fire Station headquarters. That's for a resurfacing of that parking lot. And the remaining $50,000 is actually for designer services for the Loring School. And I'll get into more detail on that. So the fire station headquarters parking lot is over 24 years old. It's in dire need of resurfacing. It's, as you'll see from an image coming up soon, that there are patches in several locations, and that was actually some of that is due to the new police station that was built right next door. We'll also be installing a new tight tank, which was funded at last annual town meeting. That tight tank is fairly large in size. It has a footprint of at least 10 feet by 17 feet, so it's going to be very disruptive to the surface. So we'll be doing that first and then paving afterwards. And then the site also needs to be properly graded. There's multiple areas where there's a lot of ponding and cracked surfaces. On the Loring School, that's approximately 20 years old. It was paved in 1998. There's a lot of cement concrete curbing that is severely spalled, exposing rebar. It's becoming very dangerous. As well as I've been communicating quite a bit with Jim Kelly and talking about access ramps. Anytime we actually touch one of the access ramps, meaning we actually have to remove and replace some of that cement concrete curbing, that's actually touching the handicap ramp. At that point, Code of Federal Regulations, the federal requirements, require us to upgrade that ramp to today's standards. So we'll have to upgrade multiple handicap ramps, at least 10 at that location. And the pavement needs severe resurfacing. So now back to the fire station on Hudson Road. You can see from the photo up there, there are multiple locations. I just hit the wrong one. I'll go old school. You can see there's multiple locations where there's the darker section where there's patches done from when the police station was constructed. You can see another dark patch here. You can also see there's some gray lighter shades in the rear of the apparatus bays of the fire station. That's where there's a lot of settling out and a lot of the stormwater runoff is settling there. And then just to give you an idea, if you look to the back of the police station, there's this gray pad. That's the size of the new tight tank that we'll be installing at the fire station, which you'll see in a minute. That's actually relocated in the front of the apparatus bays here in the corner, and that's going to be very disruptive to
to the surface there. So here's some close-up photos. You can see some of the concrete walkways deteriorating on the left-hand photo. That'll already be replaced with hot mix asphalt. On the right-hand side, you'll see the cracks in the back of the apparatus bays, where you can see there's been a lot of ponding, and there's poor grading and patching in that area. So what we need to do is we need to do a full-depth reclamation, fully reclaim the pavement in this entire parking lot, properly grade it away from the building so we can have successful drainage. Again, the photo on the left is the front of the apparatus bay where we're going to be installing that tight tank. Basically, it'll take up the majority of this park area. And then again, on the right-hand side is the walkway to the passage doors, which will be replaced with hot mix asphalt. This is just a photo of the tight tank that was being installed at the police station, so it's going to be very similar size footprint. This is actually mandated by DEP for us to install. That takes the wash water and all the drains inside the apparatus bay, and it stores it in there to be pumped out. So it's going to be a large excavation area, at least by 15 by 20, if not more, and that's going to be very disruptive. Regarding the Loring School, there's an overall view there. You can see it's a lot more complicated. And as the things I'd mentioned earlier regarding some of the handicap ramps, again, working with the facilities department, Jim Kelly, we're looking at handicap accessibility to the rear playground area. Those are concerns of us. There's a lot of multiple disciplines happening in this site, so that's why we're looking to aid the use of a designer services for this, to put together a nice, tight bid spec and plans so we know exactly what we're doing and we can get a good cost estimate at next town meeting so we can get this funded properly. The other thing that's important to know about this type of school project is we don't have the luxury of extending it out for multiple months. We have a very short window. We want to be as little disruptive to the school as possible. So after the kids get out of school in June, you have June and July. So it's a very, very tight window. The designer services will help us get through that process. They'll help us identify if we can put this into two different phases. Maybe we can do it two different construction seasons. Maybe we can phase it and have ownership of maybe the back portion of the school while the front portion is being done during the summer and then finish the rest while school's in process. I don't know that yet. We'll know that more as we go through the designer services. As I'd mentioned, there's multiple disciplines. We have to demo portions. We have a lot of vertical granite curbing. A lot of flat work, meaning the cement, concrete work, the front entryway, as well as all of the handicap ramps. We're going to do some full-depth reclamation of the parking lot and or do some cold planing, which means grinding out the pavement and repaving, doing some additional grading, and obviously paving it with hot mix asphalt. On top of that, there's restriping, and then we have to loom and seed and clean up the site. There's a lot of different disciplines. That's why we need a really tight bid specifications so we don't have a lot of scope creep. This will allow us to get a better estimate. And what I mean by better estimate, I'm not going to say it's going to be a much better price, but it's going to help eliminate scope creep. So while we're out there doing the project, we don't have a low bidder that comes in and says, oh, well, we got to do this too. Oh, we got to do this too. Oh, we got to do this too. It helps us define the project specifically, and we'll have good, tight bid specifications and plans that we actually can refer to. So we'll get a much better cost estimate on this type of project.
Bless you.
This project, as I mentioned, has multiple handicap ramps. I've gone through most of this. Part of this, we also want to look at, as I mentioned with Jim Kelly, is access to that rear playground. That playground right now in the back of the school does not have adequate handicap accessibility, something that we're going to have to work with the design engineer to figure out. Maybe we have to relocate some things, maybe add some new parking, regrade, do some new walkways so that that can be accessible. And we do realize that the parking is at a maximum there, so we do need additional spaces. The spaces that are currently there are really tight. They're 9 feet by 18 feet. The current standard is 10 feet wide by 20 feet deep. So while we're looking at this, it'll give us the opportunity to maximize the parking in that location. And I have a quick update here on just the Code of Federal Regulations that forces us to upgrade any of these handicap accessible ramps. You can see that they are fairly complicated and they're very specific, so we can't just throw them in willy-nilly and grade them out how we wish. There's a lot of them there that actually don't meet the current regulation, so those are things we have to upgrade. And then this picture of the front of the school, you can see in the front that the actual handicap ramp right below the school sign definitely does not meet the current standards, so that's going to have to be upgraded. These pictures, it's tough to tell from up here, but if any of you do drive through the Loring School, you can see that the pavement is severe deterioration. The front of the school, we also have to look at upgrading and redesigning the existing handicap space, which is located right in this location, just in the rear of the flagpole. You'll see in a photo that's subsequent to the slide, where there's a small piece of it that actually juts out and it's constantly hit by the plows. We'd like to redesign that. It really just doesn't make sense the way it was designed. A person in a handicapped spot would have to get out of their car, exit their car, be in their safe zone, and then come around the front of the vehicle on, it's not even really a ramp, it's just a level paved surface, then go down a ramp, cross the driveway, and then back up a ramp. So we're looking at trying to integrate that to be a little bit easier for accessibilities. And that's just a close-up of that. You'll notice that there is a lot of deterioration, a lot of cracks in the surfaces. This is a close-up of the hot mix asphalt cracking around where the cement concrete curbing was installed, and you can actually see the rebar exposed. It's becoming a severe hazard. And then one of my favorite photos, where Jim is hanging over the parapet walls taking the photos. You can see this is actually a good time of the year. While some of the snow is melting, it has some salt still in it. You can see the salt depositions around all the cracks. That's it, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you, sir. Finance Committee. Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 24 with a vote of 5-3. The Finance Committee members in support of this Article 24 support this as an investment in town and school assets. The committee members voting against this article feel the town and schools need to prioritize capital investments requests to ensure that we are investing in the most prudent manner.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
CIAC, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 24? Questions or comments for the DPW director? Right over here.
Yes, Arthur Houston, 578 Peckham Road. I'm just wondering, what's the breakdown for the work that's being done at the, actually it's not work, it's design phase, right, at the school, and the work at the fire station? And kind of a follow-up question, you mentioned that the regrading would be necessary at the fire station. And I'm just wondering, what's the impact that has on the costs and whether we could just live with a grade as it is today.
Mr. Nason.
Mr. Moderator. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the breakdown of the cost. Do you want me to...
Mr. Houston, yes. You have to speak into the mic if you're going to speak.
You're asking for two different items, and I don't think you gave the breakdown of which one has which expense.
Mr. Moderator?
Please.
Thank you very much. I did neglect to say that, so thank you. The construction at the fire station would be $200,000, and that would be to do a full-depth reclamation, meaning reclaim all of the asphalt that's there now, grind it all together. That allows us the opportunity to grade it properly so we have positive drainage, and then we'll be... placing the hot mix asphalt on top of that. That total will be $200,000. And that would all be included in the cost. It's not really, if you're already reclaiming it, you're pulverizing it, you have to grade it out anyways and recompact it. So that's all part of the cost. The remaining $50,000 would be for the design of services for Loring.
Does that answer your question, sir? Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on Article 24? I see someone right here.
Greg Henderson, 65 Puffer Lane. So I hate to bring this up, but to the $50,000 threshold, what you just said is the parking lot is $200,000, and the design service at another school, which has nothing to do with it, is $50,000. So for where I sit, I feel like the only thing I can do is vote against this whole thing, because it's just one more opportunity to throw a $50,000 charge, which previously the town manager said would be in the operating budget, into one more cash capital improvement. I guess I'd like the town manager to respond to that.
Sure. So we have a capital bylaw, and the bylaw states that the CIAC shall study proposals from the Sudbury town manager, Sudbury Public Schools, and the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional High School, all the representatives, which involve major tangible items with a total project cost of more than $50,000 in a single year or over $100,000 in multiple years, and would likely require an article at town meeting for the project's authorization. The rule of the $50,000 and the $100,000 is a rule that we rarely apply to our projects. Unfortunately, the town manager's capital and our capital budget within the operating budget is only $413,000. When you look at the amount of assets that the town has, and I wish Selectman Woodard was here because he'd be able to tell you exactly how much that is, you know, $413,000 to maintain all of those assets is very difficult. And that's something that we've all recognized, and increasing that amount is very important to me. It's very important to Director Nathan, very important to Jim Kelly, and very important to the board. So we want to work towards being able to put more into the operating budget. But when we only have $413,000, we try to find alternate funding sources, and that's what we're doing here. Free cash seems like a reasonable and prudent way to do that, because one of the things you want to do with free cash is these one-time expenditures. You really don't want to use it for things you're going to need to fund every year, like operating costs, for instance, like benefits or personnel. You don't want to do that. So this seemed to make sense to fund the parking lots in this way, especially with the very small amount of capital funding that we currently do have. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 24? Anyone else? Right over here. Gentlemen, wake up, please. Thank you.
Hi, Jill Salvey, 409 Dutton Road. I can appreciate that the town has a multitude of assets that we need to maintain. We all can relate to that personally, you know. All of a sudden you've got a leak and you've got to deal with it. And I can appreciate that everything is expensive. My question really is, do we have a master plan, and we will continue at every town meeting to repeat this same dance? And do we know next year what you will be asking for? I'm not poo-pooing that we want to postpone doing this, because ultimately it will just cost more money, but there'll be something else next year. And have we looked at that broad scope and then tried to coordinate that with our financial, you know, assets and monies, and try and plan, which is what we all personally have to do? And you all have a better understanding of that than we do, and so I'm asking you just for a little more clarification.
Town manager, please. Yep.
So we do. We have a 5-year plan as well as a 15-year plan.
Melissa, could you just pull the mic a little bit closer to you?
Sorry, I have so many papers in front of me sometimes. We have both a 5-year plan and a 15-year plan, both for projects and for funding and funding sources. All of those are available on the town website. There's several committees that do work on that, including the Strategic Capital Funding Committee and the CIAC that is here tonight. So we do. We do a multitude of planning for all these articles. But you're correct. Every year there will be additional capital articles, because we do try to spread the needs out so that we do not burden the taxpayers or the budget too much in one year.
Thank you. Anyone else on Article 24? Just a minute. Anyone else on Article 24? Right here. Mr. Matthews. Just a second. You're next.
This is not a criticism, but Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. This is not a criticism of the town, but it, really kind of an observation on my part, is that at 400 plus thousand of a capital in the operating budget appears to be underfunded. And again, I'm not criticizing the town manager or the people who create the budget. I think it's on us that at some point we're going to have to dig into our taxes. We're going to have to put forward taxes to increase that operating budget so that that line item can more realistically reflect what we need to spend on capital every year. But that's going to take all of us owning up to that fact and voting for that bump up in the tax base so that folks can build it into that operating budget.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Giuliano, did you want to say something?
I just want to add that the Capital Funding Committee has been working on a multi-year plan to bring more of this funding into our operating budget, and they have a draft report, which will be one of the things we jump right into after we finish town meeting, to bring forth a presentation, some proposal that has not fully been refined for FY19, but aimed at many of the issues that have been addressed tonight.
Mr. Nason, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. To address this woman over here, I also want to mention that I've had very good success in other communities where I'll multi-phase projects, and I'm starting to do that now here, so that you will see the construction portion of Loring hopefully in front of you at the next town meeting. I've found it very useful, I guess, on my side to come to you folks with an actual bid document and the real bid number from a contractor at the next portion of this. So my goal is to have the designer services take us up right through the bid document so that when I come to you for funding, I'm not guesstimating and saying, I think it's going to be $2 million, it might be $100,000. There's no guessing. I'll have a real bid document. I'll have the actual number so that I can come to you. This is the number. You either vote on it or you don't and approve it or don't. So that's my plan going forward, and it's been very successful in the past. That way we're not guesstimating it at what the cost could be, and we could come in over, we could come in under.
Thank you, sir. Are we ready for a vote? Okay. Anybody else have a burning desire to say anything that hasn't been said before? Okay. Here we go. This requires a majority vote. All in favor, raise your cards. All opposed? That motion passes by well more than a majority. Article 24 passes. Article 25, wireless technology infrastructure improvements for the Sudbury Public Schools. Motion by the Facilities Director, Jim Kelly.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $175,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Does that receive a second? Thank you. Presentation by Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you again, everybody. I'm Jim Kelly, Facilities Director. I will present the wireless technology infrastructure improvements for the Sudbury Public Schools. So this is a free cash funded request, $175,000 for wireless improvements in the elementary schools. This is called an expansion project because this is a project that's sort of been in the planning stages for several years. The school's IT department actually began improvements at the Curtis Middle School a couple years ago. They created a platform of Cisco, Meraki, wireless. I'm looking at Mark Thompson because he's the guy who's going to say, yeah, you said it right. Very successful. They'd like to keep that same platform and move into all of the elementary schools. Need not say it probably more than once, but computers are a big part of our classroom. This technology is critical for the teachers every day in our school classrooms. Mike O'Brien is the director of the IT department of Sudbury Public Schools, and he pointed out the reliability and the management of this is so critical. Reliability to make sure all of the kids, teachers, parents, anybody who goes into school, but really mainly the kids, have the access and they can get on the networks. Management, because he can actually see what's going on in the network. He can, if need be, manipulate the network to make sure that he has the reliability. So the cost breakdown, again, we're requesting $175,000 from the town via free cash. The project cost is $250,000. The great thing with this is Mike has got a grant for $100,000. So, that's fabulous. And the $25,000 that's missing there is just a contingency that we put back in, a just-in-case number. So that just kind of gives you the idea of the money. So I was working on the presentation and looking for a picture. And I saw this picture and I thought how times have changed since I was in college, because that's certainly not the way it was when I was there, and that wasn't that long ago. But at the Sudbury Public Schools, they have had wireless. They do have some wireless devices in the elementary schools. They're called Apple AirPorts. They're older. They were put in 10 or 12 years ago. They're like a consumer-level device. They're not supported anymore, I understand. They're basically obsolete. So, it's a great project. The time is now. It's necessary to do this. With the grant, too, is great. So this slide probably would have been the only slide I really needed. If you can see, in 2005, 600 devices, 15% wireless. Today, 3,400. and 90% wireless. So that says a lot. The testing, MCAS and others that I have never heard of, are all done via Chromebooks now. They're all wireless. So it's important to do this.
Just a suggestion, if that's the only slide you needed.
I know.
Just saying.
You know, you never want to take asking for money lightly. So this is my last slide, and I thought that also was pretty on point for today. Really, this is, I want to say, let's shout out to Michael O'Brien and his team, Bernie, Michelle, and Andrew at the Sudbury Public Schools. The work they do every day, it's unbelievable. They put up with me asking funny, stupid questions, and they put up with the leaky Fairbank roof. And I just, you know, really want to, you know, give a shout out to those guys and women that do all that work every day. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 25 by a vote of 6-2. The Finance Committee members in support of Article 25 consider this an investment in school assets. Committee members voting against this request feel the town and school needs to prioritize capital investment requests to ensure we are investing in the most prudent manner.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 25? Questions or comments for Mr. Kelly? I see no one. Okay. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 25, raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than a majority. Article 26, Sudbury Public Schools Playground Improvements. Jim Kelly for a motion.
Move in the words of the article, with the sum of $25,000 to be transferred from free cash.
You will note that your warrant has the number $150,000 in it, and this is an amendment to that warrant language. Is there a second to this motion? Thank you. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Moderator. This is titled Sudbury Public Schools Playground Improvements, which you heard just a bit about from Dan Nason's presentation on the Loring School parking lot. It has changed dramatically from what you see in the warrant, and I will explain that as I move through the presentation. So a lot of the work on this project started last fall. We realized that we need to make some changes in our playgrounds. We have playgrounds that are in really pretty good shape. They're modern, if you will. They're aluminum and plastic, but they are getting older, as everything does. We need to make sure they're safe, of course, but really what we found is the accessibility issue. Wood chips is what you'll see on surfaces all over the state and country on playgrounds, and that was once considered an accessible surface. It is no longer by the state Architectural Access Board considered an accessible surface. Some of our structures are starting to get a little bit older. We need to look into replacing those. So we need to look into doing sort of a whole look at all of our playgrounds. So we started that with a master plan, and we were hoping to be prepared tonight to ask for $150,000 so that we could actually do construction to make some of these better improvements. But we're not ready. And we want to be prepared. We want to have the right plan for the town, for the schools. So we wanted a little more time to work with the teachers, the parents, residents, to make sure that we get the best design we can and we move forward and make some changes as soon as possible to some of our playgrounds. So I'm just going to run through some of the existing conditions. As I said, most of our playgrounds are in pretty good shape. They're getting older. They were built about 16 to 22 years ago, although they don't look it. They're excellently well maintained. Every year, there's inspections done, of course. But like I said before, mostly it's an accessibility issue. Tonight, the $25,000, why you see that? Because there are some immediate repairs we need to do this summer. We had an assessment by a certified playground inspector, which there really are those people because they really understand everything about a piece of playground equipment. They did an itemized list, and we have some work to do this summer. So these are just pictures of the playgrounds. If you haven't seen them all, you've seen one of them. They all look the same. You see Haynes on the left and Nixon on the right. Again, we want to look at each one of them. We want to look at them as a whole, but we're planning to do them at sort of either one or two a year. These could be quite expensive. This is a picture of the Loring School on the left and Noyes on the right, both taken from the roofs. The Loring School seriously is a challenging site. So between doing this assessment of our needs in our playground specifically and at the same time looking at our parking lot sidewalks, we feel as though we have a good plan going forward to merge those two together, work immediately, starting to make those plans, starting to develop those plans and cost estimates and come back with some solutions. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I just wanted to prove that I have a list of repairs. And these are just lists that we went through with the inspector. You can see some of the numbers. The Loring repairs here, for instance, is almost $6,000. So again, just to conclude tonight, it's only $25,000. We need to do some more planning. One of the things that we understand now, or I do, is that this playground project is a CPA eligible project. So it would be a good idea if we went to the Community Preservation Committee, talk to them. It's a funding opportunity, a funding source. We'd also like to talk to some private PTO people. PTOs really, I think, may have built a lot of these playgrounds, and I know they support them, but, you know, we have to reach out and see if there's some support that we could look for more. I will say that, personally, I'm a little disappointed because this is so important. I think I made that clear at a Finance Committee meeting several months ago. But we're going to start fixing these playgrounds as soon as possible. I'd like to see you all back here in October and see if we can get these things done.
Thanks, Jim. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 26. This was the second vote for Article 26 with this reduced request of $25,000. Finance Committee supports this reduced amount as it allows for the necessary improvements while also allowing SBS and the town facilities function to better plan for playground improvements.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
CIAC, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC did not take a position on this article because of the size of it. It's not within its mandate.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 26? Right here.
Hi. Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. So this is great. I think we need to fix our playground, absolutely. And Mr. Kelly has been kind enough in the last couple of days to answer a lot of my questions. One thing that I realize is this is going to cost a lot of money over the next year, couple of years, several years, however long it takes, a lot of money. So I would just urge everyone to think about the upcoming articles that are coming up. There are some other things to vote on, tennis courts, for example, which I love tennis. It's great. I think it's wonderful, but let's tennis courts versus accessible playgrounds. That's it.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 26? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed. That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than a majority. Article 27 is the Stabilization Fund, motion by Len Simon.
Move to transfer $113,533 from free cash to the Stabilization Fund established under Article 12
of the October 7, 1982 special town meeting.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Melissa Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The town has a policy through the Board of Selectmen, and I believe also the Finance Committee, that we will work towards the goal of maintaining in our stabilization fund an amount equal to 5% of the total projected general operating revenues for the previous fiscal year. The town stabilization fund is like our savings account or our rainy day fund. At the beginning of town meeting, the balance in our stabilization fund was $4,606,353.19. The policy dictated balance is $4,719,885. Tonight, we are requesting a transfer in the amount of $113,532. Please note that we made two transfers at town meeting on the first night, so the ending balance after this transfer will be $4,369,885. After free cash is certified in the fall, we will be suggesting at October town meeting that we make an additional transfer to bring the stabilization fund to the policy dictated balance. Thank you.
Excellent. Finance Committee.
Finance Committee unanimously supports transfer of $113,532 from free cash to the stabilization fund.
Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 27? Anyone wish to be heard on Article 27? Right here. Mr. Alwan.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. I guess I'm just curious. Earlier, there was sort of a laundry list of things that were being taken out of free cash, and there was $150,000 for the previous Article 26. We only used 25 of that. Where did that other, could we add that $125,000 to this also and have a little bit more in our stabilization fund?
So we could do a motion to amend the article and put more money into this item. We do like to keep 0.5% of our free cash in the free cash bucket in case there is an emergency and we do need it. If we did that, we would not have that 0.5% any longer because of the transfer we made for unemployment on the first night onto the budget article. I think that it's important for us to keep the commitment to continue the 5% of free of stabilization. So I think that's why it would be important for us to make that transfer in October. Now, any free cash that we did not use this year would technically roll over to next year, so we would have available funds to do that.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Excellent. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 27? I see no one.
Thank you.
This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the Article 27 motion, raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes unanimously. 28. Article 28 starts the Community Preservation Fund section of our meeting. Motion by Chris Morley.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second? Excellent. Okay, Chris, this seems like a great time for you to give your little CPC spiel. What do you think? Okay.
I think it's a good idea.
How much time do you need?
Well, I got a copy from Len, but I took out half the pages.
Let me ask that again. How much time do you need?
Five. Or less.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Chris Morley, chair of the Community Preservation Committee, member through the Planning Board. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. In the interest of time, I'm assuming that most of you already are quite familiar with how the CPA and SUBRE program works. For those who are not, please feel free to ask questions or use your phones to quickly get to the Community Preservation Committee page on the town's website. On the right side of your page, you'll find a brief description, and under General News, you can call up our report of 2009, which is our foundation report, lays out exactly what it is that we do and how we do it. Also, in your warrant, pages FC40 and FC46 have some current information on CPA funds. That said, let's quickly go to the most Googled info, which is where does the money come from? Funding from the state has represented a significant portion of monies available for the CPA and SUBRE program. From inception to last year, almost $11 million. The state's match of local funds has dropped from 100%, however. For 3 years, special legislative appropriations have kept the match percentage up, and new legislation is moving forward on Beacon Hill to raise the state contribution and make it more predictable. Last year, we expected $306,000. We got $392,000. Neither are insignificant amounts of money. The town has also received additional non-CPA funding as a follow-on to our land rights purchases. 900,000 additional state dollars have come to us in those grants, specifically intended to reinforce our commitment to land preservation. How Sudbury's portion is raised from you, the more important information, is complex and includes many exemptions, actually. But the shorthand for all of that is that it's a tax on your real estate tax, and the average house assessed for CPA purposes at $706,000 this year will pay a CPA surtax of $322. For that, I think we get a lot done. As you all have heard me say annually in this forum, the CPA and Sudbury program was, in its inception, adoption, and operation, largely an open space preservation program. The vast majority of our expenditures to date have been to preserve open space, while using the eventual program that was designed by the state legislature to accomplish many more things for the town. Even the 61% share on this chart is deceivingly low, as it only represents the actual funds expended to date and not the full $25 million acquisition cost of almost 600 acres of land that we have preserved in perpetuity. On the same chart, the largest number of actual projects has been in the historic preservation category, though the four historic expenditures have been the least. Even though most such projects have a small dollar value, some great work has been done. Preserving historic archives through the town clerk and library, cemetery headstone and monument preservation, work done on historic buildings like the Hearst House, Hosmer House, and Loring Parsonage. Tonight, we will be voting on the first step of the largest project to date under the historic preservation category, restoration of the Sudbury Town Hall. I have spoken here before about how the CPA program in the state, with more than half of all cities and towns now belonging, is both extremely popular and flexible. For some communities, community housing gets the bulk of their CPA spending. For Sudbury, it's been open space. For others, though, historic preservation is their focus. The town of Concord, next door, their largest CPA project to date has not been a large piece of land, such as our Knobscot Mountain, but rather restoration of their townhouse. Gloucester joined CPA specifically because they wanted to use those funds to restore their town hall. The restoration of the Needham Town Hall is still the single largest CPA project dollar-wise statewide in the 15-year history of the CPA. Town hall revitalization is one of the most popular uses of CPA funds, with dozens of town halls fully restored and dozens more substantially improved. Tonight, we get to decide if we want to do the same here in Sudbury. The CPC's most important charge for town meeting is to determine if a given project is statutorily eligible. Our second most important is to maintain the financial flexibility of the program itself into the future, balanced against time-sensitive opportunities. Our work is, though prudently, project-specific. The view down the road is an educated guess, while a project in front of us is exactly that. Many projects will not wait for down the road. This approach has served us well for 15 years. 2 years ago, we used $1 million in CPA cash as a portion of the town's larger bonded purchase of the Johnson Farm property, a timely expenditure for a worthy cause. Tonight, we propose using $600,000 in cash for the initial work on the town hall project. Our cash reserves now sit at $5.2 million before tonight's voting. Cash gives the CPC and the town flexibility when an urgent project arises, such as an unanticipated sale of open space land. Its best use is in combination with bonding for larger projects, reducing the cost of debt but retaining cash for future flexibility. Going forward, I expect that that is where the Selectmen and the Finance Committee will be looking in the funding of larger projects. For example, the next step in the Town Hall project, the construction phase. The CPA and Sudbury program currently has that financial flexibility. The use of non-CPA funds in combination is also available in the toolkit for creatively accomplishing the goals of the town as a whole. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Chris. Does anyone from the CPC want to say anything about the reason for indefinitely postponing Article 28?
Yes, Dick Williamson will be speaking to that.
Mr. Williamson, on the motion to indefinitely postpone.
I'm a member of the Park and Recreation Commission. I'm going to talk briefly about the Smile Playground. This has been a wonderful asset for the town of Sudbury. I know that when my kids were playground age, that I used some of the playgrounds in town, and they were not nearly as nice as the Smile Playground. So I get to have a second phase in my life. I get to take my grandchildren there, and it's been a wonderful asset. However, it needs some work. And here are some of the reasons. We need to figure out what is the best way to put in the pour-in-place surface. The pour-in-place surface is sort of a rubberized but resilient surface that is handicapped accessible and keeps little kids from getting concussions and so on. And we want to have the entire playground be pour-in-play. Part of the playground right now is wood chips. As Jim Kelly said, that is not really up to snuff for kids that have handicapped issues. So we need to look at this in more detail during the next few months. We may be back to you by October, but we need to do something over there, and therefore we want to indefinitely postpone. We don't want to set October as a date, but we hope to be back in October. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Finance Committee.
Finance Committee supports indefinite postponement.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support to postpone this article.
Okay. Does anyone wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 28? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. Article 29, Community Preservation Fund, Featherland Park Court Reconstruction, motion by Mr. Morley.
Move to appropriate the sum of $220,000 from Community Preservation Act funds as stated in the article.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Morley. I'm sorry, Ms. Houston.
Yes, Ms. Houston. There she is.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. Tonight, the Park and Rec Commission is excited to show you the opportunity to recreate the Featherland Park courts to provide multiple sports for multiple generations. Ms. Topham? No? There you go. Okay. So first, a little history on the courts. One pair of courts were built in 1961, the other in 1965. A year later, they were color-coded, and 10 years later, they were color-coded again. In 1987, 26 years after the original project, the courts had to be rebuilt. After the winter of 2014-2015, someone decided that the posts were damaged enough that the fence posts and the tennis posts needed to be taken down, dismantled. The Park and Rec Commission was not consulted when this happened. The courts are ready now to be rebuilt. And here's a picture of what the courts look like now. These cracks were there in 2014-2015. This is just a couple of the doozies. There's court cracks all over the courts and all parts on all four courts. So the Park and Rec Commission is proposing $220,000 from CPC funds to rebuild four tennis courts. But in addition, they're going to provide two more sports on those same courts. Pickleball courts will be added onto two of the courts, and four half-court basketball courts will be on the other two courts. They'll have key and three-point lines only for the basketball. It will not be full-court basketball. The basketball hoops will be built into the fence posts. The overall courts will maintain the current orientation, and there'll be a dividing fence with a windscreen on those fences. There'll also be wheelchair-accessible gates and parking. The wheelchair athletes require no other court modifications other than having access to the courts. And the trees along Concord Road will stay in place. The Park and Rec Commission is dedicated to providing recreation opportunities for many people in many locations throughout town. This is a brief... There we go. So the basic courts, the basic outdoor fencing is the yellow line. These red hoops are where the half-court basketball would be. The pickleball lines would be shared with the tennis. And this is where the handicap parking would be, so that the handicap parking would not interfere with any other established parking in the court. in the parking lot. The location of Featherland Court is ideal because it's located so close to so many residences. It's also within access of the proposed Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. And this setup will support recreation for residents of all ages and abilities to play these sports. Here's a sample layout of pickleball on a tennis court. So you see the white lines are the tennis, the yellow lines are the pickleball. They play on the same net. And over here, they use dotted lines. I suspect we'll use straight lines. That'll all get decided. But the basketball hoop, you can see a basketball hoop up here. And they have lines over there. And that's basically where the basketball hoop is on this side, too. So it's integrated into the fence. The commission appreciates the support of the Communication Preservation Commission, Board of Selectmen, FinCom, and the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, as well as the voters of Sudbury, to help provide recreation opportunities for multiple sports for multiple generations. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Houston. Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 29.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 29? Right here.
Diane Sincotta, 262 Willis Road.
I'm sorry, can you say your last name again, please?
Sincotta.
Thank you.
I never heard of pickleball. I play tennis. I wouldn't play in those courts. I'd go cross-eyed. And I don't know, we're on Article whatever number we're on, and I could think of a better use of the funds. That's all.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 29? Right over here. No. I'll recognize you when it's time.
Okay.
Thank you. Michael Miller, 2 Candlewood Circle. I'd like to speak strongly in support of the article. I don't think it's a real choice between children's playgrounds and this particular project for CPC funds. I think, as Ms. Houston said, this is a multi-generation. I have never gone to Featherland without seeing people playing with their children. And so I think it's a wonderful use of those funds for children. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 29? Gentleman right here, please stand up. Can just a minute. Wait. Scout, come down here. Hand. There you go. Thank you.
Dean Casey, 85 Pocanoket. I don't have any experience in building or resurfacing the courts like this, but I just wonder how many bids have we gotten on this and what's the scope or the range of those bids?
Ms. Houston, do you have that information?
We have a budgetary quote from a company in Westboro in our hands, but it will go out to bid once we get support and are voted on for approval.
So you expect to get how many bids?
As many bids as complies with state law, I would imagine.
But right now, we don't know what the range of bids might be for...
Right, but the budgetary quote we have from a professional, and the town of Sutton has done a similar project, and their number came in around a similar number. So we've done the research to get a budgetary quote on this, and we'll move forward with going for bid as soon as we get approval.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 29? Right over here. This gentleman, second row.
I'm Michael A., 27 Middle Road. So I just have a question. Have you done any analysis on whether the tennis courts are actually needed? I play tennis, love it. But, you know, I've never had a problem getting any availability on near the water district or the high school.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Have you done any analysis to see whether there's a need for tennis courts? Again, it's back to a couple of other people who mentioned priority.
Okay. Ms. Houston, do you have an analysis of need?
We haven't done a detailed demand. What we have done is there's 3 points of data. Can we go back to my presentation? There's a couple of supporting documents. Slide number 11. Sudbury Research, it's called. It's in the supporting documents. Perfect, thank you. Thank you. So in the open space plan from 2009, the survey results showed that court sports were a high priority for many of the respondents. That was for basketball and tennis. The Park and Rec Commission had a public hearing in October 2015. That public hearing was brought forth because Sudbury Baseball suggested replacing that space with small baseball fields because they need small baseball fields. But there was a strong message from the attendants that, yes, we need small baseball fields, but, yes, we want those tennis courts back. The other thing is the town last year, since the courts were dismantled in 2014 and 2015, the Park and Rec Commission has been trying to figure out how to rebuild this because there was a clear message from the residents. And we went to capital ballot last year, but as you know, most of those capital debts were failed at the ballot. Even though the tennis courts ultimately failed the ballot, there were 724 votes for those tennis courts, and that proposal was just for tennis courts, not pickleball or basketball. The key thing about this is it's players of all ages and abilities. And the LS junior varsity tennis team cannot have matches unless the Featherland courts are built. So what happens now is since the courts were dismantled, the junior varsity team practices down at Feely, and some people have probably seen them there, but they can't have their matches there because it takes five courts to have a match, and the varsity gets five out of the six at the high school. There's one remaining court at the high school that when Featherland is rebuilt, four of those other JV matches will then happen at Featherland. Without having the Featherland courts, the JV matches can't happen because if there isn't enough time to play a match after the varsity has finished, there's no time for the JV match. So the other thing is people use those for a lot of reasons. Featherland is so centrally located and has many residences in the area that people can get there by sidewalks. They drive by on their way to and from school. A lot of the high school kids park there. They can throw a basketball in the back of their car and go play basketball on the half-court basketball hoops. We have to remember that distributed recreation facilities are really important in a healthy community. If people see recreation facilities, they will use the recreational facilities. And recreation is a key component to maintaining mental health, to managing
Houston,
chronic illnesses.
Ms. Houston, I think you've responded to that question adequately. Do we have enough information to vote on this article? Are we ready for a vote? Okay, two more. Right here.
Grant Grummer, 15 Pine Street.
I'm sorry, can you say that again, please?
Grant Grummer, 15 Pine Street.
Thank you.
As noted, there are trees in front of the Featherland Park. You can still see right through the trees, and it is a real eyesore. And it's along a major road, people going through Sudbury. It does not make our town look very appealing to have that area that's obviously for recreation to look like such a disaster that it is. It affects my property value, affects everyone else's property value, that we have such an eyesore. Do something with it. I'd prefer the tennis courts and all. Elsewise, get rid of it, but do something with it.
Okay. Someone over here had a burning desire to speak. Right here. Right here. Scouts. Please, stand up. Thank you.
Thank you. Ursula Lyons, Wayside Inn Road. When you put the plans in to multitask those courts, which I have used many times in the past, how did you think about prioritizing who's going to play when and what? I mean, obviously the JV tennis team has first priority from what you said, but if the basketball courts are being used, the tennis court really can't be used. So is there some thought about telling people who can play when or doing anything about it?
Ms. Houston, briefly, please.
So one reason that the basketball is half court and there's four half court nets suggested for this project is that if someone's playing half court on one side, then someone else can play tennis on the other side, and they can. If there is no one playing on the other pair of tennis courts, they can play another pair of tennis courts. So the chances of all four tennis courts being used at all one time or all four basketballs being used at one time is probably slim. The whole point of this was provide lots of options.
Okay. We ready for a vote? Okay. All right. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor, please raise your card. All those opposed, that passes by well more than a majority. Article 30 has been withdrawn. Article 31, Community Preservation Fund Town Hall Restoration / Rehabilitation, motion by Mr. Morley.
Move to appropriate the sum of $600,000 from Community Preservation Act funds as stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? Thank you. Okay. My understanding is that this presentation is going to be truncated. The presenters are Mr. Kelly, Mr. Reap, and Mr. Morley. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. And we are going to truncate.
Who's starting?
I'm just going to, you just said that Mr. Kelly, and I think they can present themselves, and then okay. I will come back and give a very short, if anything, presentation.
Okay. Just remember, less is more.
Thank you, everybody. Jim Kelly again. I'm going to begin talking a little bit about the town hall. Old and new. Old is real old and gone, built in 1846, burned down in 1930. We built a new one within 2 years after burning it, after the other one burned down. Opened up in 1932. That's the new town hall, which you see every day if you drive through town center. Built by a great building committee in the town. Issues were about the same as we deal with in all of our new buildings today, the cost, location, and how we're going to pay for it. I'm going to speak a little bit because of my job, facilities director. I know the building pretty well. I've climbed around it, in it, on it, under it. I've dealt with the leaks above and below. The current state of town hall is a deteriorating building. Okay, we haven't really spent a lot of money, if any, other than trying to keep it sort of heated and usable on the first floor where we have a lot of meetings. The slates on the roof are sliding off. The nails are rusting. The flashings are leaking. The leaks aren't so bad because there's no insulation in the building, so all the wood dries. It gets wet. It dries out. It really hasn't harmed it. One of the beautiful things about an inefficient building. The handicap entrance at the on the side, you can see, is ridiculous. It was done temporarily when the library moved in and as they renovated the Goodnell Library. Inside the town hall, not much better. If you've been to the bathrooms in the front of town hall, I probably need not say anything more. But that's okay. I mean, we know the town hall. We know it's beyond sort of its usefulness. We know that we use it limited. We know we have no access. You probably don't know that there's a beautiful auditorium on the second floor. That was once the location of all our town meetings. So what I wanted to mention was an issue that's been brought up, and I think it's a good issue, is we have a lot of buildings in town, and we have a lot of needs. And we're talking about buildings that need renovations. For instance, the Fairbank Community Center. We need a location for the Sudbury Public Schools. We need to look into a fire station on Route 20. So how does this one fit in? Well, this one is deteriorating, as I mentioned. This one also is part of a master plan that was created in 2002. Now, that's old in some eyes, but yet it's fairly accurate. That master plan included the town hall, the Flynn Building, Loring Parsonage, police station, and Fairbank Center. We've got the police station done. The Loring Parsonage is going to be a museum. We moved the town manager's staff from the Parsonage to the Flynn Building. We made the Flynn Building accessible. We created a Flynn Building Beautification Committee by staff several years ago. We've made the Flynn Building a really good office building. That leaves the town hall. So the town hall is the subject of tonight. What are we going to do for the future? We need to start planning for the town hall now. The town hall is a beautiful building. Structurally, it's actually really a robust structure. Brick masonry, steel frame in the attic, wood frame on the floor and roof trusses. But I just wanted to bring that up because is this the right time to look at doing the town hall when we have so many other needs? My opinion is it absolutely is. because we can't wait too much longer. And you'll hear maybe again primarily why we can do this, or at least we can suggest we do this, is because the funding source will not compete with the other buildings. This funding source is the Community Preservation Act funds. Those funds would not be available for use for the Fairbank Community Center, for example. So I will leave you with that and turn this over to Frank Reap to say a few words.
Frank Reap, I'm a member of the Town Hall Blue Ribbon Committee. And we were chartered 2 years ago by the Board of Selectmen to reevaluate Town Hall. And after much study, we reached the conclusion that Town Hall should simply be restored to its original function. And for the most part, when it was built in the early 1930s, it housed most functions of town government. There was the fire department was in the basement. The police chief was on the first floor somewhere. There was a kitchen, and the students from the school next door would come over and have lunches in the lower level. And the upper level was the main meeting space for the town. And it's a space that most people have long forgotten, have not even seen. But like many town halls around the Commonwealth that were built in earlier times, they were the focus for the community. They were the center of civic life. And as life became more complicated, the departments of town administration became more fragmented. Town halls have gone through a period of neglect, but they are now in a period of great revival, and we're seeing town hall buildings now being restored, both architecturally as well as functionally, to being the focus of civic life. And the let's see if I can advance this. The proposal that this committee reached is to renovate the entire building top to bottom, which actually is rather involved because all the mechanical systems and electrical systems and safety systems have to be completely rebuilt. And while the building is structurally sound and the interior finishes of the primary meeting spaces are entirely satisfactory, save for antiquated lighting systems, etc., the building is quite sound. But the proposal is to, let me change this to the first floor, which will be familiar. The first floor is the focus of the work, primarily that most people will see on a daily basis. The town clerk's offices will be expanded. They are extremely cramped there now. There would be a small addition built on the northeast corner of the building to accommodate a new handicap accessible entrance, lobby, elevator to connect all the various levels of the building, substantial public restrooms, and the primary meeting space will be completely restored, and the original lobby restored. The upper level, again, would be reached by a new elevator in the northeast corner, and we will be able to bring back to life the main meeting hall of the town. And this can become a focus for civic life in the broadest sense, in that this is not simply about town administration. We reached the conclusion that we did not need to be moving major segments of town offices into town hall for it to reach its full potential. In fact, our study showed that attempting to introduce whole departments of offices beyond the town clerk was quite impractical from a structural and a financial point of view. So with the town hall resuscitated, it will be available not just for expanded use of the meeting functions of town government, but also for civic activities, cultural activities, which again we see in resuscitated town halls all around. So we can look as an example in Acton. The town hall has the upper town hall has a fabulous meeting room that's used all the time. We have the Weston Town Hall, likewise. The Sandwich Town Hall went through a beautiful restoration. It's absolutely fabulous. And the Chelmsford Provincetown, Lincoln's right next door, Bemis Hall was Bemis Hall was at one time in the late 1900s built as the town hall, but it is now a beautiful period meeting space that houses the Council on Aging at this time. Concord Town Hall.
Mr. Reap, time's up.
Time is up.
Time marches on.
I'll have to leave it at that then.
So I know that you had more to do, but why don't we do this? Is there something striking about your presentation that couldn't be handled in response to a question?
Well, we actually had a video planned, but it's...
How long is the video?
No, hang on. There were technical difficulties. I did have stunning commentary I can say now because I won't have to say it. So we can just skip it entirely and go to questions.
Excellent. Okay. Finance Committee for a report on Article 31.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 31 by a vote of 5-3. Members supporting the restoration and rehabilitation agree with the prioritization by the CIC and the need to renovate the town hall. The three members opposed were concerned about the operating cost model for the new facility and whether there is market need for the uses and vision for the building.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard? Questions or comments regarding Article 31? Mr. Travers.
No.
Sure. Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Tom Travers, 32 Old Framingham Road. I'd like to thank the Town Hall Blue Ribbon Committee for all their hard work and their December 6, 2016 report. Unfortunately, I disagree with the conclusions of the committee because I disagree with the committee's proposed limited uses for the building. I feel that if the town is going to spend $6 million on a building, we should receive much more benefit and value added from our investment than what the town will get if we follow the committee's use recommendations. Town Hall definitely needs to be renovated. It's in disrepair, and the town needs to address all the building's issues. I believe that we need an adaptive reuse strategy that rehabs Town Hall to be the center of town's government and should be used to consolidate as many services and departments as physically possible. The committee's plan is a preservation strategy that modernizes the present meeting space, the storage space, and archiving facilities for the town and reconfigures the town clerk's office. This was the program that the building in 1932, when we had a population of less than 1,500 people in town. Presently, we have a building which in 1932 was rebuilt to be an expanded replica of the 1846 Town Hall building. This replica sits in the middle of our historic district. This building, in its present configuration, is not utilized to its full potential. Now the committee proposes to rehab it essentially into a similar configuration and to continue to unutilize the building's space potential. Town departments are spread out all over town, which I am sure leads to some inefficiencies. Can many of the departments benefit from being closer together? By updating the town's current space needs plans, we could possibly consolidate and relocate departments to produce a functional use for the town hall building. With a population of over 18,000 residents, I'm sure that we can find better uses for this town treasure. I think it is imperative to update our space needs study before we make any investment in any new administrative buildings. Town Hall should be the hub for centralized town offices that can better serve the town's residents. It could consolidate most of town government in one location by rehabbing the building, and we could also increase the meeting areas in this building by expanding the footprint of the building. I would also include enough storage space for the town's historic documents. The rehab building could continue to have a historic look of the front and the side facades and provide a more efficient, energy-efficient building, centralized town government services, and provide areas for meeting of town government. Why should we spend $6 million to get what we have today with no value added other than the modernizing the space? The present plan calls for two multipurpose meeting rooms on the first and second floors with ADA access. The multipurpose spaces will be rented out to town groups such as the Sudbury Museum and other private and public users for meetings and functions. Also, space will be made available to the Sudbury Museum for storage. If the historic museum's archive storage and meeting areas are needed to help make the museum function better, that should be addressed by their own private fundraising rather than the town's CPA funds. I do not think that Town Hall should be a social place where weddings, birthday parties, christenings, and bar mitzvah parties should take place. If we rehabbed Town Hall to house most of the town's departments, we could use these CPA funds to help the entire community. The Flynn Building could be used to house the SBS administration offices and possibly to even consolidate IT services for both the town and the SBS schools in one location. There is a proposal coming soon to build a 9,000-square-foot office building on the Nixon School campus for SBS administration. People will argue that putting this new building on Nixon's campus is great because it puts SBA's administration near a school. We can meet that objective by moving SBS to Flynn, which is next to the Noyes School. I believe we want to save all our Nixon campus land for school expansion rather than office expansion. I would recommend that we defeat this article to spend $600,000 on architectural plans for uses recommended by the Town Hall Blue Ribbon Committee until we have a multifunctional space needs study that benefits the entire town and adds efficiency and functional value for the entire thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Travers. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 31? There's a gentleman in the way back. Scouts, can we get this gentleman a mic, please? Sure. Come on up. Quickly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Timothy Coyne, 24 Taylor Road. I don't dispute what the previous speaker has said, because I know his affection for the town is at least equal to mine. However, two things strike me as being significant right now. One is, it's an old New England expression, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without. The 1932 building was meant to last, and it has served us well to this point. It is part of the character of one of the choicest town centers in all New England, a town center that's been augmented by the consideration of putting its 115 kilovolt electrical service underground. It's making it one of the best places to just stand and regard how good it is to be in Sudbury. Preservation of anything is a rarity in this country. We tear ourselves down and throw ourselves away about every 50 years as part of the dynamic of the most dynamic country in the world. I would urge you to pass this article, if for nothing else, than to start a ball rolling that could go someplace equally as good as what the previous speaker has suggested. And I would also suggest to you something that's come to me recently, and it's an expression I've been using for about a year now. Sooner is better than later. You don't know how much you have until you lose it. And I would urge you to consider that what you've got is worth at least this much amount of money. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Corn. Who else wishes to be heard on? If you wish to speak on this article, raise your card so I get a sense of how many people actually want to talk. Okay. Let's start with the gentleman, Mr. Howery, and then to the gentleman right next to you.
Hi, Mark Howery, 55 Old Coach Road. I just want to add that the CIAC, by majority vote, did support this article. So now I've said that, now I'm speaking for myself. I do have some concerns about this article, how often it would be used, how it fits with the space that we're hopefully going to be doing at Fairbanks soon. And I want to say that I don't think the idea that we're talking about here is tearing it down. It still would be there. The facade still would be there. It would be used for a different purpose than is being proposed now, because it just isn't clear to me that it's the highest and best use.
Okay. Can you hand the mic to the gentleman right to your right? Thank you.
Hi. Charlie Rousseau, Juniper Road. I plan to vote to support this, but my question is, what would this bring the CPA fund to? And what would the CPA fund be if we made all the appropriations tonight? That way we can judge not just is this a worthy project and is it, you know, do we have the funds available, but also keep in mind, you know, potential future purchases or expenditures for, say, the Wayside Inn property or other things like that. For both the CPA and the free cash, I think would be helpful to know, as those funds are decremented, what the final result is. Thank you.
Mr. Morley, do you have a handle on that?
I do. It was actually in the earlier speech that I gave. So we have $5.2 million in cash, so this would take out $600,000 of that. And then I had suggested that possibly one could take cash and do the construction project, but it would possibly, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the town financial staff, and they work very hard to make sure that we have the lowest cost of what we're trying to do. So I had suggested that a combination of debt and CPA debt and CPA cash would be appropriate for the construction. But we definitely have the financial capability to do this project.
Okay.
Fully CPA.
Who else? There was right here.
Hi. Jean Nam, Newbridge Road. Just a quick question about parking. As a parent at Noyes, if there's anything going on at Noyes, there's nowhere to park. So just wondering what the parking solution is. Thanks.
Mr. Morley.
Yes, so we did have a very truncated presentation tonight. The report is online, so you're welcome to read it. We actually imagined the, first off, what your point actually gets to what Mr. Travers was talking about, imagining putting all these office space and building space there takes away from parking and then adds all the employees who need to park, let alone the people who come to the building. But in this case, we really thought the town owns 27 acres there, which includes the school, the Flynn, the town hall, the cemetery. There are people who do this for a living, and there is a much better way for access and parking on the entire lot. And that, at the same time as the town hall project, I believe the facilities department would be looking to get an answer to what can we do to all of it at the same time so that it works better for everybody. Because you're right, it is not efficient now.
Okay. Anyone else? I see no one. quantum of vote required for passage is a majority. All those in favor of the motion under Article 31, please raise your cards. All those opposed, that passes by well more than a majority. 32, Community Preservation Fund Regional Housing Services Office Allocation, motion by Mr. Morley.
Move to appropriate the sum of $30,000 from Community Preservation Act funds as stated in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is a request for $30,000 to fund a portion of the Town of Sunbury's membership fee to the Regional Housing Services Office. In the past, this has been funded each year through the CPC Administrative Funds outline item, which you'll be voting on in a few more articles, but it has been determined that this need should be funded via this application process instead. And obviously, this application does meet the CPC criteria. The Regional Housing Services Office is a regional collaboration with seven communities. We all enter into an intermunicipal agreement. It's a three-year agreement and will be approved by the Board of Selectmen every 3 years. It comes up again actually this June or July. It was started in Sudbury in 2011 and was created to regionalize housing administration offices. It's based in Concord, and the town of Concord hires all of the staff. It does many different functions for the town. Currently, the way we fund this is through two different expenditures. So we fund $30,000 through CPA, and the Housing Trust funds another almost $30,000 through their non-CPA funds. We use the Regional Housing Services Office for items like monitoring, inventory, management, our home administration, supporting the assessor, our ISD support, which has to do with senior development, and other support as well. This is a very important request because we use this to support and preserve our affordable housing in Sudbury. This year, we actually made it to our 10% threshold, and we use this monitoring to make sure that we continue to maintain that. Without the Regional Housing Services Office, we would have to increase staff hours or hire other additional consultants. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 32? Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 32? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All those in favor, please raise your card. All those opposed. That passes unanimously. 33, Community Preservation Fund Sudbury Housing Authority Allocation. Motion by Sherry Klein.
Move to appropriate the sum of $212,600 from Community Preservation Act funds as stated in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Ms. Klein.
Good evening. My name is Sherry Klein. I'm a commissioner on the board of the Sudbury Housing Authority. The Sudbury Housing Authority is a quasi-governmental entity overseen by the State Department of Housing and Community Development. The Housing Authority has existed here in Sudbury since it was approved in 1971 at town meeting. Our function is to own and manage rental property for low-income senior citizens, the disabled, and low-income families. The Housing Authority owns Musketaquid Village, which is on Hudson Road right next to the new police station. The village has 64 apartments that are reserved for people over 60 and disabled. We also own and maintain and rent to families 28 single-family or duplex houses that are scattered throughout Sudbury. As mentioned by Selectman Giuliano last night, in Sudbury we have two entities that are working towards affordable housing. One is us, the Housing Authority, that deals with rental property, and the other is the Housing Trust that was approved at town meeting in 2006, which deals with home ownership. Since the inception of the Housing Authority, our goal has been to increase our inventory of affordable rental units. In the 1970s, Musketaquid Village was built, and our first scattered site houses were purchased. Since then, the acquisition of affordable housing has become more difficult as land prices have increased and also the size of the houses has increased. The Housing Authority has been creative in its efforts to increase its inventory. Most recently, in 2008, town meeting approved $600,000, which we used to leverage money from the state. And with this project, we demolished five old, very large single-family houses that we owned. On those five sites, we built five duplexes, thus doubling the number of families that we could house. The picture here shows on the lower left-hand corner, Musketaquid Village that was built in 1976. The top left and the bottom right, I believe, show duplexes that were built in the 1990s, and the upper right hand is one of the duplexes that was just completed about 6 years ago. The Community Preservation Act requires that 10% of the projected annual revenue for each year be allocated to affordable housing. The Housing Authority is seeking the appropriation of $212,600, which represents 10% of the 2018 projected revenue. Our intent is to use these funds, along with other funds that we have on hand, to create at least one affordable housing unit to be owned and maintained by the Sudbury Housing Authority and added to our rental inventory. We are exploring several avenues, one of which is to purchase a suitably sized and suitably priced house on the open market. Another is to see if one of the vacant properties owned by the town and identified some 14 years ago would be suitable for building property. Whatever route we pursue, it is important to be ready and able to take advantage of the opportunity when it presents itself. Occasionally, a state has programs to assist local housing authorities. However, having local money available is often a requirement of leveraging state funds, as it was when we built the duplexes. In short, we need to be nimble to take advantage of opportunities and find innovative solutions to the shortage of affordable housing in Sudbury. There is a significant need for affordable housing in this town. At the Housing Authority, we don't have a lot of turnover in our properties. For example, in our senior and disabled population, we average five vacancies per year, and in our family housing, we average one vacancy every 3 years. Because the wait for housing was so long, we closed our waiting list in 2012. In the fall of 2016, we opened our waiting list for 2 months, and we received an astounding 450 applications for housing. This was whittled down to half by lottery. However, given our low rate of turnover, these people will be waiting a very long time for a vacancy. Because of the great need, the Housing Authority hopes you will support this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article. The vote was 5-3. The three opposing votes, the reasons being the $30,000 that was allocated in the previous article for the Regional Housing Service Office should be counted in the 10%. Therefore, this could be $30,000 less in this allocation. And the second reason being, although fine with the Sudbury Housing Authority buying and remodeling houses, some concern was shown for the authority building houses.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 33? Right here.
Good
Mike Beloit, 27 Middle Road. I could be totally off on this, but does the Sudbury Housing Authority have anything to do with the houses on Marlborough Road?
No.
27?
No. Other questions or comments on Article 33? Anyone else want to be heard on Article 33? Okay. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously, but certainly by well more than a majority. Article 34, Community Preservation Fund, General Budget and Appropriation. Motion by Mr. Morley.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation Budget for fiscal year 2018 Community Preservation surtaxes. $57,500 for administrative and operating costs. $1,229,779 for debt service.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by, before your presentation, I would just note, Mr. Morley, that in the warrant, the number for administrative and operating costs is listed as 87.5, correct?
Yes, and that was going to be the sum of my presentation.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Presentation by Mr. Morley.
That's it. 57.5 instead of 87.5.
Oh, okay.
This is basically the accounting that's done at the end of everything we've done before.
Okay. Sorry to steal your thunder there. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Excellent. Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously approves this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 34? Right here, Mr. Polk.
Eric Polk, 28 Reddick Road. I just had a question of clarification. In the introduction, you mentioned some $900,000+ that came back in the form of grants for
land
use. Does that, is that used to reduce the debt service amount, or does it go back into funds available for CPA requests?
I can't say for sure. I assume it probably went into the fund and was accounted for in the way that the funds are accounted for.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Does anybody else want to be heard on Article 34? Right here. Yep. Stand up, please.
Thank you. Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. I'm confused about this article. Forgive my ignorance, but why is Community Preservation Fund mainly a debt service?
Mr. Morley.
Well, it's not mainly a debt service, but it is largely a debt service. As I mentioned in my speech earlier, the general thrust of the CPA in Sudbury, and not everywhere else, has been to preserve open space land and prevent building. So in order to do that, just as most of us did here in the hall, we mortgage or bond the purchase of the properties and then use CPA funds to pay that debt service. So all of that to date is for the purchase of 600 acres of land around town. Is that enough, or did you need more?
Okay. Anyone else on Article 34? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of Article 34, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes unanimously. Okay, I think that the town manager should probably start warming up a little bit. Okay. Okay, before we take up the last articles, I'd like to thank a few people. First, Melissa Rodriguez and her staff, Patty Golden, Elaine Jones, Mark Thompson, many others who work in that office tirelessly over the past several months to organize and prepare for this meeting. Their hard work ensured that you, the voters, were fully informed on all of the articles and that the town meeting itself was conducted in a safe, effective, and professional manner. They are all excellent, and we could not do this without them. So thank you. Thanks also to the town clerk and the town council who make sure, they watch me like a hawk, and they make sure that every step of the way we meet our legal obligations. It's extremely helpful for me to have them with giving me such clear and competent advice over the course of the meeting, and I very much appreciate their guidance. Finally, I always like to thank you, our citizen legislators, for caring enough about your town to participate in this process. your ability to balance your passion for the issues with a civility of tone was, as usual, exemplary and much appreciated by everyone on this stage. Town clerk has asked me to remind all of you of two things. First, there's a special town election scheduled for May 9th. Vote early and often. And also, all recently elected and appointed officials should take the oath of office from the town clerk at the conclusion of tonight's meeting. As I often do, I announce finance committee appointments at this point in the evening. According to Article 4, Section 1 of the town's bylaw, it is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the finance committee before the end of annual town meeting. This year, the terms of Fred Fleurieu, Adrian Davies, and Jose Garcia Matin are expiring. I consulted with members of the finance committee and learned that both Mr. Davies and Mr. Garcia Matin are willing to continue to serve. Thank you. Accordingly, I have informed the town manager that I have reappointed them to new three-year terms. As for Mr. Fleurieu, who has served the committee admirably for 3 years, one as vice chair and one as the FinCom representative to the Community Preservation Committee, I offer on behalf of the town our gratitude for the time and care he has given to the work of the Finance Committee. I know Mr. Fleurieu is not here tonight, but I wanted to pass along that thanks on behalf of the town. In order to fill the seat vacated by Mr. Fleurieu, I solicited applicants by posting on the town's website, in the town crier, and on a local Facebook group called One Sudbury. I received resumes from four highly qualified candidates and interviewed each of them over the last several days. I also solicited input from members of the FinCom. The selection decision was extremely difficult this year because all of the candidates were qualified, competent, and enthusiastic to serve. Ultimately, I felt it was important to add someone with both a business background as well as significant prior experience in service to the town. I'm convinced that my appointee is capable, ready, and willing to make an immediate contribution to the work of the FinCom, and I have informed the town manager of the appointment of Eric Polk of 28 Ruddock Road to a three-year term on the Finance Committee. Eric has been a consistent volunteer in this town for over 20 years, having previously served on the Strategic Planning Committee, the Economic Development Committee, the Rail Trail Conversion Advisory Committee, the Route 20 Wastewater Steering Committee, on which he was co-chair, as well as the Planning Board, where he served as vice chair. His dedication to the town has been remarkable, and ultimately the breadth of his experience was the determining factor in my decision. On a personal note, I had the pleasure of serving with Eric for many years on the Planning Board, and it is from that experience that I can say with certainty that he will bring an unwavering sense of civility and respectful collaboration to his work on the FinCom. I thank everyone who applied for the position, and I sincerely hope that each of them will consider applying for some other town board or committee or reapplying to the FinCom when positions open up in the future. Each candidate was excellent, truly excellent. And I encourage each of them to find a way to contribute their own unique skills to help improve the town. On a related matter, I'd like to inform the hall that my three-year term as moderator will be expiring in March 2018, and that I will not be a candidate for re-election. As some of you know, Michelle and I recently bought a house in Truro, fulfilling a lifelong dream to live near the ocean. And it was certainly a bittersweet decision for us after 25 years in this wonderful town, but ultimately we decided it was time for a new adventure. So I bring this to your attention now because the tight timeline between the 2018 town elections and annual town meeting makes it critical that anyone who may be interested in this position begin to prepare as soon as possible. Town elections are at the end of March, and town meeting will commence about a month thereafter, leaving a very short window for the moderator to get up to speed. Also, since our house is on the market, there's a possibility that we will no longer be Sudbury residents when special town meeting convenes in October of 2017. If that happens, town council informs me that the hall would need to elect a moderator at the opening of that meeting. So, I'll do whatever's necessary to ensure a smooth transition of the moderator's responsibilities. I'll meet with anyone who's interested in stepping into this job. I'll share my materials, my observations, my notes, whatever is necessary in order to make that transition smooth. And so if you're interested, I encourage you to get in touch with me tomorrow. On a personal note, I think it's pretty obvious that I've really enjoyed serving as your moderator. It's been stimulating. It's really never boring. And I've learned quite a bit about a lot of things. So I hope that your next moderator has as much fun and experiences the same sense of fulfillment from doing this job as I did. So thank you. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Article 35, Plastic Checkout Bag Ban Bylaw. This is a petition article, motion by a member of the LS Environmental Club. Who's going to speak to make the motion? Is Mr. Morrison?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. Please do so. Before you speak, I just want to note that there are several LS high school students that are here in support of this. Raise your hand when I say your name, please. Cecilia Barnes, Lucy Bergeron, Elizabeth Kincannon, Julia Kincannon, Anne Julie Das, Nicole Garay, Elizabeth Kaufman, Kirsten Kelly. Excellent. So why don't you make a motion and we'll go from there.
Bob Morrison, 16 October Road, member of Sustainable Sudbury. We're making the motion on behalf of the petitioners, just not because they're incapable themselves, it's because they're just a little shy of voting age. So, move in the words of the article, except that in Section 3, I'll try to read this slowly, regulated conduct, paragraph A, the implementation date in the first sentence shall be replaced with the date of June 30th, 2018, and in Section 5, enforcement, the words police officers and are removed from the first sentence. Now, Mr. Moderator, pass it over to the club for the presentation.
Can I just hold on that for just a second? I'm sorry. My bad. So does that motion receive a second? It does. Okay. Presentations? How are we going to organize this?
So there... the group is ready to present. They've rehearsed this, and they. Who steps up first? Is it?
Okay. When you step up, please identify yourself. Please note that the group has 10 minutes to present.
Hi, my name is Cecilia Barnes, and we're the Ellis Environmental Club. And over the past few months, we've been working hard on creating the next two articles. Article 35 revolves around the use of plastic shopping bags. If passed, Article 35 would limit the sale of thin plastic bags with handles provided by large stores, which we defined as greater than 3,500 square feet.
My name is Nicole Garay. During the Earth Day cleanup day, LS students and club members collected trash along nearby roads. 75% of the trash collected were plastics, 15% was styrofoam, and the other 15% was other trash.
My name is Anjali Das. Plastic bags need 500 to 1,000 years to break down, and they never fully biodegrade. Instead, they gradually turn into smaller and smaller pieces of plastic that animals often mistake for food. More than 100,000 animals die each year due to entanglement in a plastic bag or the consumption of plastic bags. Here's an example of one of the ways plastic bags can have a deadly effect on marine animals. This dead sperm whale died of starvation because there were 100 plastic bags in its stomach.
I'm Elizabeth Kaufman, and 1,500 is the average number of plastic shopping bags an American family takes home per year, and 23,000 is the number of plastic bags given out per month by one local Lincoln store, which we took a poll on. And of those bags, only 5 to 10% of plastic bags were properly recycled.
My name is Lucy Bergeron, and we understand that this kind of change won't happen right away, so we've decided to start small with plastics that we think we really can, that aren't really necessary. So this means that paper bags will still be available and plastic bags without handles will still be available. So one question we often get is, why do we need to legislate instead of just educating the population? And education is definitely the most important, and our goal is to change the culture, not just the laws. And we have been working to educate for a while now, and we will continue. But we decided this year that we should start bring the conversation to the town, and affect, and these legislations will affect everybody equally in a more lasting way.
I'm Kirsten Kelly. So far, as of January 2017, 47 towns in Massachusetts have banned single-use plastic shopping bags, representing around 16% of the state population. These include familiar surrounding towns such as Concord, Wayland, and Framingham. These are local supporters, and we also have letters of support from the Humane Society, Mass Audubon, and the Sierra Club. We want our community, we want Sudbury to reduce our carbon footprint and unnecessary plastic use and become a more clean and beautiful place. So please help us by banning the bag.
Is that it? Great. Thank you very much. Why don't you just stay right there and we'll see if there's questions or a discussion for you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 35? Questions for the presenters? Right here, Mr. DePompei. Mr. DePompei, please hold for a minute. Finance Committee have a position on this?
The Finance Committee has no position on this.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen has not taken a position on this article in anticipation that there may be amendments offered, some of which may be adopted. And once the final motion is presented, with or without amendments, the Board of Selectmen may then consider a position.
Okay, if I don't get back to you, remind me. Board of Health, does the Board of Health have a position on this? Mr. DePompei, sit down for a minute. I'll get back to you.
Carol Bradford, Board of Health. We move to amend the motion under Article 35 by adding, after the first semicolon, the words, and in the last phrase in paragraph A, the words, or after July 1, 2017, for retail establishments less than 3,500 square feet shall be deleted, so that the amended motion will read, move in the words of the article that except in Section 3, Regulated Conduct, Paragraph A, the implementation date in the first sentence shall be replaced with the date of June 30, 2018, and in the last phrase in Paragraph A, the words, or after July 1, 2017, for retail establishments less than 3,500 square feet shall be deleted. And in Section 5, enforcement, the words police officers and are removed from the first sentence.
Okay, does that receive a second? It does.
Some of it was. Less than 3,500 square feet was removed.
I'm confused. You're making a motion to amend? Please hold.
The motion that was read was, Bill Murphy, Health Director. The motion that was read was not the one that was on the screen. They're going to put that up.
I don't have this. I have something different. When did this come? I don't have it.
That was just read.
Just a minute. Just a minute. Okay. So why don't we put up the motion on the view screen that is the what the language that's suggested by the Board of Health. Do we have that? Okay. So just so, you know, I'm confused as well as you, but my understanding is that there was some, that the initial motion that was up on the screen was incorrect. The motion that is now on the screen represents a motion to amend brought by the Board of Health. Is that fair to say, gentlemen? Okay. And the language that is up on the screen, can we show the whole? There it is. Okay. Okay, so there's a motion been made by the Board of Health to amend this article to add this language. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. Can you can be heard on your motion to amend, Mr. Murphy?
The Board of Health is moving to amend the petitioner's motion, one, because we want to limit the bylaw to retailers of 3,500 or to 3,500 or greater, and eliminate, according to the bylaw, the way it was written now, was to include retailers 3,500 square feet or smaller. Funding would be necessary to administer the bylaw for smaller retailers and properly staff the health department to ensure compliance. Staffing is also needed to identify who all of these 3,500 square foot store retailers or less are. They may include jewelry stores, clothing stores, paper stationery stores, hairdressers, and nail salons that all include retail as part of their establishment. And in order to enforce this and get out and educate these retailers, we would need to have adequate staff to do so.
Okay, Mr. Murphy, did you discuss your amendment with the petitioners prior to making it?
We did.
You did?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, we did.
So this is a friendly amendment. Is that right? No? Okay. Do you want to be heard on the motion to amend?
Yes.
Okay, please.
Bob Morrison, 16 October Road. We're sensitive to the health departments and health directors' needs in terms of staffing. However, in our survey of businesses, what we heard was that a level playing field is required. The larger businesses don't want the smaller businesses to be exempted from this article. So really, it's only fair that all businesses are affected by the article, and this scope does include all. And we at Sustainable Sudbury are willing to help with outreach, as I'm sure as also the Environmental Club is. We will be the additional staff that the health director might need to do this. As far as and actually we had numerous conversations with Bill Murphy, the health director, and we added the initial changes that you saw because of these conversations. So we delayed the onset of the article as the original motion noted, in order to help with that outreach, and also remove the police officers and portion that was requested by the Board of Health director. So we're fine with all but the elimination of the we're fine with everything, but we need all the businesses to be affected by this article.
Okay, who wants to be heard on the motion to amend? I see no one who wants to be heard on the motion to amend. Is that correct? Okay. The motion to amend needs a majority to pass. All those in favor of the Board of Health's motion to amend, please raise your cards. All those opposed. The motion to amend fails. Back to the main motion. Who wishes to be... Can we put the main motion back on the view screen, Mark? We're sure this is the right one, right? Okay. All right. Mr. DePompei.
Dan DePompei, 35 Haynes Road. I noticed in one of the slides that was up there that the data that you had received was from a store in Lincoln, and Shaw's and Sudbury Farms have not responded. So my question is, what do the large businesses in Sudbury say about this?
Okay, Mr. Morrison.
So Sustainable Sudbury surveyed businesses in Sudbury, and the position on this article was neutrality overall. It was 15% in favor, strongly in favor, 55 to 60% were neutral, and the remaining were against. Essentially, the large stores have seen this and elsewhere in their other communities that they're in, and that this is they expected this. They didn't realize that the article would come in Sudbury. They were unaware of this, but they had known about it for all the other 47 communities that the club mentioned have already enacted it. So neutrality is the corporate position of both Sudbury Farms, CVS, and all the others, a lot of the large retailers in Sudbury.
Okay. Who else has a question or a comment on Article 35? Gentleman way in the back. I'm sorry. The lady way in the back. Sorry.
I'll grow my hair. Shirley Hittig, 54 Wake Robin Road. My question is just a point of information, I guess. If the town meeting passes this, does it go to town election, or does it become a change in the bylaws as a result of the vote tonight? Thank you.
Change in the bylaws as a result of the vote tonight, correct. It does not go to the... would you like to address that?
Go ahead.
No, please. Step up. Identify yourself before you speak. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. I'll answer this. If it gets voted in favor, then it will become a bylaw.
And what's your name?
Lucy Bergeron.
Thank you. Okay, other questions? Ms. Rupenia.
Kirsten Rupenia, Harness Lane. I don't really have a problem with this bylaw ban. My concern now is when you talk about enforcement, and we just spoke at the amendment about enforcement, so what is the actual jurisdictional authority for the club here to be able to help with enforcement and to avoid having the Board of Health have to add on some personnel? I'd like to have some explanation as to that.
Mr. Morrison.
Neither Sustainable Sudbury nor the club would actually participate with the enforcement, but it would greatly help with outreach. And part of bag bans in other communities have had an initial period of demand, additional staff demand from the health departments. But after that, it's a quieting down period that occurs once the businesses are aware of it. So outreach would really be a part of it. We'll meet with businesses. We'll develop the promotional materials needed along with the health director. And I think that would, you know, and we are sensitive over to the additional burden that will be presented to the health director, at least initially for this.
Sure. That's okay.
Sorry, follow-up, Kirsten Rupenian. As a follow-up to it, though, then my question, I guess, is to the health director and or the town manager in that how are you or are you prepared to compensate for this additional requirement, and have the conversations taken place between the environmental club and yourself or the Board of Health relative to how this is actually going to happen?
Town manager?
Health director and I have discussed what we would do for enforcement. Currently, we actually have a contractual employee who does our enforcement matters for all of our food and milk establishments. We would have to enter into another contract or change the scope of that contract to include enforcement of this or the other bylaw at an additional cost.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on this Article 35? Right over here.
Thank you. My name is James Brownell, Horse Pond Road. I'm actually kind of turned and round. I think I'm more in favor of this law now, but the bylaw. But my question is there an ability of these stores to be able to get all the paper bags they're going to need? And have the stores indicated any kind of hardship that might accrue because of this?
Do you want to feel that, Mr. Morrison?
Yeah, in our survey, the establishments have again seen this coming, and most reported no adverse effect from this. The idea, however, really is not replacement throwaway bags. It's bring your own bag. So the outreach would encourage people to either have or be able to buy at a retail establishment a reusable bag. And the paper bags would just be stopgap measures whenever that weren't available.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 35? Right here. Ms. Weiner.
Ellen Joachim, Craig Lane. I just had a question. Can you clarify the effective date for the small retailers? And if it's different, can you explain why, what the reason is for the difference?
It's the same, actually. And so the implementation date for both retailers would be the same, although it's in the warrant. I think that needed to be corrected, at least for one of the articles. So what is actually on the view graph now is correct, and that would be the start date, the implementation date for all retailers.
Okay. Anybody else? Right here. Ms. Koh, you're next. Can we get a mic to this gentleman right all the way back here in the middle?
Martha Koh, 14 Churchill Street. I had hoped I would not have to stand up and say this. I have been very concerned about even the addition of Whole Foods to our commercial base in this town, because when I studied, I had a professor who was one of the pioneers in shopping centers more than 50 years ago. And one of the things you have to think about is what you call your anchor stores. Your anchor stores are usually the supermarket, or it would be CVS, the big retailer that brings in the customers who shop at the smaller shops. You do not want to rent a store in a shopping center where the anchor store is either in trouble or has gone out of business. Now, if you want to see a place where that has happened, you should take a look at Knobscot Center a few before they put in the Christopher McAuliffe Library. It was just they lost Crosby Stark. There was a big number of affordable houses.
Mrs. Koh?
Yeah.
The hour is late.
I am concerned about if we have Sudbury Farm, Shaw, CVS. These are our anchor stores for our business district. And I don't want to see them forced to close.
Thank you. There's a person right back here that I recognize. Do you have a mic now? Excellent. Thank you. Keep talking. Mic's off.
Paula Wyman, 114 Old Lancaster Road. I'm speaking out in favor of this article. I have been living in Paris, France, and Europe for the past several months, and similar laws were in place there, where, for example, when you go to the supermarket, it is only possible to buy a reusable bag or to bring your own bag. And I have seen there that many people were very good about bringing their own bags, and it was very efficient that way, and it did save a lot of plastic bags. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else on Article 35? I see no one. This requires a majority vote for passage. All those in favor of the motion under Article 35, please raise your cards. All those opposed. The motion passes by well more than a majority. Congratulations. Ladies and gentlemen, we're at Article 36, but we have slithered past the 10:30 hour. In order to continue tonight, we need a vote of the hall to take this one more article and finish up tonight and see the dance. So can I have a motion, please, to continue past 10:30 for the purposes of addressing Article 36? Is there a second? All in favor? Majority vote, please. All opposed? Okay, we're moving on because that passes by well more than a majority. Article 36, Mr. Morrison.
Bob Morrison, 16 October Road. Whoops. That's okay. Moving the words of the article, except that in the Section 2 regulated conduct, first paragraph, third sentence, the proposed effective date shall be replaced with the date of June 30th, 2018, and Section 3 enforcement, the words police officers and are removed from the first sentences, similar as the prior article.
Can you go back to the motion, please? No, just a minute. This is what I've got. Okay, I see. Okay. All right. I'll be with you in a minute. A lot of paper flying around up here. Okay, does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by Mr. Morrison. I'm sorry, okay. Hang on a second. Who's going to present? Is it going to be you or?
No,
okay. Let's do it.
Cecilia Barnes. Article 36 proposes a limitation of the sale of plastic water bottles. Article 36 states that non-reusable water bottles that are 1 liter or less would not be permitted to be sold in Sudbury. This does not include carbonated or flavored water, and we strongly encourage everyone to bring their own reusable water bottle. Once you throw away or even recycle plastic bottles, the plastic will never disappear. Plastics will remain on the earth forever. Although many people recycle their plastics, only 20% of those plastic bottles in the U.S. that are in the recycling actually get recycled. Elizabeth Kaufman, and 167 is the number of bottles an average American will use each year. And Aquafina and Dasani are actually municipal tap water put into plastic bottles and marked up 300 times its cost.
So a big concern, Lucy Bergeron, a big concern that a lot of people have with this article is the effect it will have on businesses, and we'd like to point out that there are ways to find advantages within this bylaw. Also another concern people have is that this will cause people to buy unhealthy drinks and sugary drinks because there won't be water available, and to that would say that there's still mineral water and carbonated water available and other healthy drinks, and also larger than 1 liter is available. And Sustainable Sudbury is helping us work with businesses to find these solutions.
Anjali Das. Here are some photos taken by the trash paddler, a man who paddles the rivers of Lincoln, Concord, and Sudbury, picking up trash in the water. As you can see, there's a large amount of plastic bottles that most likely would have ended up in the ocean. Nicole Garay. Another environmental impact is that a lot of natural resources are being used to manufacture water bottles. It takes 17 million barrels of oil to produce enough bottles for American demand, and it takes 3 times as much water to make a single bottle than it does to fill it.
Kirsten Kelly. Not only does it require excessive amounts of energy and resources just to manufacture and ship plastic water bottles, there are also posed serious health conditions. Chemicals and plastics are correlated with health issues such as cancer, asthma, birth defects, and infertility. These chemicals tend to bioaccumulate in organisms as they move up the food chain, putting us at a higher risk of consuming these chemicals from foods we eat, especially fish.
Elizabeth Kaufman. The EPA regulates tap water and tests bacteria multiple times a day and shares their information with the public. But the FDA regulates bottled water, but they are only required to test weekly and do not share their findings with the EPA or the public. And purchased bottled water is not tested for chemicals leached from the plastic.
It's a reminder of our local supporters. Please help us rid our community of plastic waste by banning the bottle.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee has not taken a position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen has not yet taken a position on this article.
Okay. I understand the Board of Health may have an amendment to offer. You don't have an amendment. Okay. Would you like to be heard on the main motion? Okay.
Carol Bradford, Board of Health. The Board of Health supports the efforts of the students and the intent of Article 36, but recommends an indefinite postponement of Article 36. We had some issues we wanted addressed.
Again, I have to raise the funding issue to pass a bylaw without having it funded. I did talk to counterparts in Concord and Brookline, both adding staff to ensure compliance with the bylaw. We're also looking for provisions are made in the bylaw to prevent water and plastic bottles from being replaced with sugar-sweetened beverages and plastic bottles. And talking to both counterparts, that was a realistic thing that happened, that the shelves were refilled with sugar drinks. Increased efforts are made to provide filtered water stations at locations such as athletic fields and public buildings to give an option to fill water. Have the bylaw address loopholes such as distribution of free water, which happened at a lot of establishments that had to comply. Instead of having to sell the water, they issued the water bottles as part of a free package of sandwich chips and free drinks or gasoline and free water bottles. So, we'd ask that the bylaw address those issues, but look for an indefinite postponement at this time.
Okay. Sorry to get all procedural on you, but you've used the word indefinite postponement a couple of times, and that would normally require a motion to indefinitely postpone. You didn't make a motion. What you did is you spoke in opposition to the main motion. Now, what we can do is this. Why don't we have some discussion? If at some point you want to come back and make a motion to indefinitely postpone, I'll recognize you to do that. The difference between simply opposing the motion that's on the floor and making a motion to indefinitely postpone is that, on the one hand, you're saying the article should be defeated and never see the light of day again. If you want to make a motion to indefinitely postpone, you can make suggestions as to how the article may be improved and brought back at future town meetings. So I assume the latter is what you'd like to do. Is that fair? Okay. So let's have a little discussion, and then I'll recognize you again if at some point you'd like to revive this notion of indefinite postponement. Okay? All right. Discussion on Article 36. Right here.
Hi there. Jack Kaiser, 66 Willow Road. I use these refillable water bottles all the time. Sorry about that. It's empty. I drank it. So I use these refillable water bottles all the time, but however, I'm against this onerous nanny state article. I think we've already seen some of the enforcement issues. We're not known as a town that's good for business. I think we're trying to establish a business district and have new stores moving in. I think this is going to encourage people to go to other towns to do the shopping. You know, picture the scenario. You have an adult party and maybe your grandkids are coming over, a birthday party. I use those refillable things all the time, but you have a party, you need water bottles. So now you're going to have to drive to Framingham or Marlboro to do that. While you're there, you might as well do your birthday shopping and do all your shopping there. I think it's very bad for business. I think it's a major inconvenience to us, and we've seen a lot of issues about enforcement. I think the high school students have done a nice job here, and I encourage people to recycle, but I really don't want the government telling me to do that. Thank you.
Okay. Right here.
Melissa Goff, Wildwood Lane. In response to that, I would say two things. If a business is staying in business because of the water it sells, it probably needs a better business model. I take your point, but, if you want to go to Costco and buy water, it's not really the point. If you're having a party, put a jug of water out with some cups. There are other options. Somehow we didn't all die of thirst before there were bottled water in single-serve containers. I think we can figure out how to do this.
Okay, thanks. Who else wants to be heard on Article 36? Right here. You're next.
Hi, Jill Falvey, 409 Dutton Road.
Again, I agree with everything that's been said. I have rain barrels. I compost. I recycle 15-gallon trash bag. You know, that's it for a family of three. I do everything. I do not use plastic bags. I do not buy bottled water. What I do have a concern about this moving forward and moving forward quickly, especially with some concerns with the health department, is unintended consequences. And we as a town have experienced a lot of unintended consequences as a result of a lot of things that have been voted on that are the right things. I agree with this. I'm not against it. I'm just concerned about moving so quickly that we can't take a moment to step back and think about the concerns of public health and unintended consequences. Thank you.
Okay. There's someone in the back, way in the back. Green shirt. Is that you, Mr. Hiltz?
It is.
Okay, wait a minute. You're not a Sudbury resident, correct?
I am not.
Okay. Mr. Hiltz is known to me, a longtime Sudbury resident now, unfortunately lives in Marlboro, but is employed at Sudbury Wine and Spirits. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. I need a motion to allow non-resident Kenny Hiltz to speak. Does someone want to make that motion? Okay. Second. All in favor, I need a majority. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Mr. Hiltz, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. My name is Kenny Hiltz. I'm employed at Sudbury Wine and Spirits, and I'm speaking here tonight on behalf of Joe Sayo, the owner, and a Sudbury resident. We commend these young people for being proactive, but I do agree with our health board and some of the other people that spoke here tonight that sometimes by moving too quickly, you know, the effects can be damaging sometimes. And it's not just about water. What happens is there's the full carriage effect. So if people go somewhere else to buy their water, they're not going to just buy their water. They are going to buy other products that they would normally buy in this town if they were able to. So I guess on behalf of Sudbury Wine and Spirits, we're not saying that this isn't doable. We're just saying or asking that maybe we just need to slow down a little bit and really, you know, delve into this before we make a final decision. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hiltz. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 36? Gentlemen, all the way in the back here.
John Reardon, 12 Pendleton Road. I just want to congratulate and express my admiration for the young people in front of us tonight. For taking action and being proactive and doing something about our environment. And for all of those people who worried about rushing into action, I better never see you getting into an Uber car. I really think that these people are more concerned about the environment that they're going to be living in and that my grandchildren are going to have to grow up in than many of the adults in this town. And I really think that you should be applauded for your initiative. And I really think that this isn't a brand new idea. There's other communities have adopted this. I saw what happened with the bag issue and the bottled water in Concord and the bag issue in Brookline, and there was a lot of, you know, Chicken Little hand-wringing going on, and this was the end of civilization as we knew it, and it didn't happen. And people were able to adapt, and people consumers had changed their behavior, and we have a better environment because of it, and it's because of the actions of people like this, these young people standing in front of you, and I highly applaud them.
Thank you, Mr. Reardon. Who else wishes to be heard? Right here in the plaid. Right here.
Graham Taylor, 221 Goodmans Hill Road. In all the towns to have this come up, Sudbury has fine water. Just drink the tap water. What do you need all these bottles for?
Thank you, sir. Right here. Right here.
Adrian Sheldon, Mill Pond Road. I absolutely agree with what the gentleman in the back said. You guys kick butt. Keep it up. I think plastic bags, as the woman in, mentioned about Europe, it's not a big deal. We'll look back on the days when we used to have plastic bags and we used to have plastic water bottles.
We're on to water bottles, though.
Yeah, we'll look back, you know, when we used to have plastic water bottles, and we won't miss it. It won't make any difference. We'll just use reusable water bottles, reusable bags. You know, it's not going to affect the businesses. So I highly support this article, and it'll be a nice change.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Williamson. Right here.
Well, I definitely want to commend the young people here for bringing this forward. I want to repeat some comments that I made at the Board of Selectmen's meeting when you first presented this. I moved to Sudbury 40-some-odd years ago, and my job was in Lexington. And I did a very unusual thing. I commuted 7 months of the year back and forth by bicycle. And so I really applaud your concern for the environment. And as I commuted back and forth by bicycle, one of the things I noted, far more than you would ever in a car, is how many of those damn bottles are in the gutter as you go along. And I was picking them up in huge numbers over the years. And I really think that it could be, those could be eliminated. And they used to be, the water bottles do not have a deposit. I mean, the number of soda bottles that have a deposit, the number of those has gone way down. What has not gone down is the plastic bottles. They have no deposit.
Thank you, sir.
Dick Williamson, Pendleton Road.
Thank you, sir. Okay. There's a couple over here. Right here.
Doris Goldthwaite, 141 Goodman's Hill Road. I'm speaking in favor of this article. Each day I walk from my house, which is a mile south of the town center, up to the town center and back, and each day I pick up 10 items of trash. The supply never runs out, and a lot of it is water bottles and other plastic containers. I grew up in an era before they invented plastic water bottles. We all had our thermoses, and now you have these much more interesting space-age water bottles. That college campuses are now completely changed over to filling stations for bottled water. I think it's our responsibility to do that. And if it costs a little money to enforce it, then that's something that this town has been very generous with our money tonight. The value of this is far worth a small increase for enforcement. And I also, as others have done, want to recognize the students. It gives me great satisfaction that the votes we've made in favor of the high school and the elementary school is coming to fruition with truly responsible citizens who both learn and put it into practice, which is not easy.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard in opposition to the article? Anybody in opposition to the article? I'm sorry? Okay. Kirsten, let's start with you.
Kirsten Rapinian, are you going to make me sit down if I say I'm really not in opposition?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I don't want to be the skunk at the garden party here, but I've got some grave concerns about the funding of this because I know that the Board of Health has just had a $10,000 reduction in their budget. If there's no money that follows along with this initiative, I don't understand where that money's going to come from, and there's been no offering tonight as to where that money might come from. I'm sure that we could find it, but I don't know, number one, how much money it is or how we're going to find it. And I guess my question is to either the town manager or the Board of Selectmen who have not yet taken a position, and I'm curious as to why they hadn't taken a position, if they're prepared at this point to either take a position or not. And the reason I'm reluctant to support this is simply because if we don't have the money to support it, we're going to be standing here wringing our hands and saying, why didn't we do this? I don't understand what's going to happen, how it's going
to
work.
Okay, town manager, you want to speak to the money question?
Sure. Thankfully, we actually didn't have to go forward with a $10,000 cut in the Board of Health budget. Thank God, because that was for mosquito spraying and it would have been bad. But additionally, the enforcement is a concern. Obviously, it is a financial concern. There is a portion of the bylaw that does allow the town manager to petition the Board of Selectmen if we find it to be too costly, and the Board of Selectmen would have a public hearing considering that. So there is mechanisms built in that do contemplate that. That being said, it would be concerning, and the only real source of funding for this would be for us to go to the reserve fund for a transfer.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak in opposition to the article? Mr. DePompei.
Dan DePompei, Haynes Road. I support the initiative. I support the goal. But I have the same difficulty in that the phrase that keeps coming back into my mind is unfunded mandate. I'm a little bit concerned of how we compensate for it. And by the way, knowing human nature, I agree. I think sugary drinks will definitely show up in greater quantity once the water disappears, because we have a society today that pretty much has to have a bottle and drinking something all day long with them.
Okay, so we've heard many speakers speak passionately both for and against the article. One of the concepts introduced by the Board of Health was to postpone discussion of this indefinitely. I want to give the Board of Health the opportunity to make that motion if indeed you'd like to do that now. And if you could state the reason that you would want to postpone consideration of this in connection with your motion.
The Board of Health would recommend postponing the article until we've had more time to vet all the issues that have been discussed.
Okay, so can you say, I move to indefinitely postpone?
I move to indefinitely postpone Article 36.
Does that receive a second? It does. Okay, discussion on the motion to indefinitely postpone. Anybody wish to be heard on that? Right here.
Good evening, everyone. Lisa Kushachin, 30 Meadowbrook Circle. I am on the school committee, but my question is more as a taxpayer. First of all, I want to commend these three young women here this evening. Great job. Just an amazing effort on your part.
Just a minute. When she has the mic and she's recognized, she's the only one who should be speaking. So please be quiet and respect her right to speak. Can you address the motion to indefinitely postpone, please?
I just had a question for Mrs. Bradford. I'm just wondering if we've thought about the effect on the students in the schools. I know the kids in the schools use water bottles a lot, and how, you know, our schools would manage not using the plastic water bottles. We have, like,
the school,
big...
school doesn't provide plastic water bottles to the students.
No, but even the PTOs? I mean, have the PTOs been contacted at all?
I don't know if the students have contacted the PTOs.
Okay.
Okay, who else wants to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Anybody else? Mr. Morley. Wherever you want.
Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster. Part of me feels like the time is now, and there's really very little reason not to. I understand the concern of enforcement and the cost that it may bring. On the other hand, the bylaw as written doesn't appear to me to require enforcement, does it? I'm just asking the town manager, if I may. Or you can ask the town manager.
It does require, right. So, Mr. Moderator, if I may?
Yes, you may.
Certainly. It does require enforcement. The only way that we would be able to not enforce it is by following Section 4, where we would have a public hearing discussing the cost. And after that public hearing, the Board of Selectmen could suspend the enforcement.
Right, but in Section 3, how does it define enforcement?
Section 3 says that the police officers and health agents shall have the authority to enforce this bylaw.
Right, and then we took out police officers. But it says we shall have the authority.
Have
it doesn't
authority.
Say that we shall
Once we
enforce.
Pass bylaw, we have to enforce it.
Generally, yes. I'm just
wait
saying
a minute, wait
interim.
A minute. Chris.
Yep.
This
sorry.
Is not a back and forth here.
You're right.
Okay?
I'm sorry.
State what you're going to state.
I apologize.
And then
my point was just that there may be a transition. These two groups have offered to help with that transition. The town doesn't need to immediately run out and hire staff to enforce something that the world wouldn't end if it wasn't enforced. That was my point.
Thank you, sir.
Sorry
Who else wants
that.
To be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Right here.
I'm sorry. Oh, that's one.
Okay.
Cindy Fenichel, Old Lancaster Road. I applaud you all for bringing this to our attention and for proposing this. I am supportive of reducing the number of plastic in any way possible. However, as someone who does get her lunch when she's out during the day at work or whatever, I don't want to have to go pick up my sandwich and have to choose between soda and lemonade and juice and whatever. I really think if we're going to do this right, we have to either get rid of all plastic bottles or not do this, because I think what's going to happen is there are going to be no other options for people like me but to get other types of drinks to go with my meal. And frankly, I support your intention, but I think we have to think this through before we just reduce one type of beverage.
Okay, as you may have noticed, the debate on the motion to indefinitely postpone has drifted into the substantive aspects of the main motion. So let's just take a vote on the motion to indefinitely postpone and then see what happens. Okay, this is a majority vote to indefinitely postpone Article 36. All those in favor of indefinitely postponing this article, raise your cards. This is a majority vote. All those opposed, the motion to amend fails. We're on to the main motion. Any further discussion regarding, yes, Ms. Giuliano?
The Board of Selectmen had deferred our decision until tonight, in part because we anticipated amendments such as the delayed implementation. They wanted to fully hear from the Board of Health, but we are split 2-2, so we still don't have a position.
Okay, thanks. Helpful, sort of. Mr. Quirk, you can call it. There's a motion to call the question. Does that receive a second? It does. The vote on the call of the question is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of ending debate and calling the question, please raise your cards. All those opposed, question has been called. Motion under Article 36 requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the main motion under Article 36, raise your cards. All those opposed, can I see that one more time, please? All those in favor? All those opposed? I'm sorry, the motion passes by more than a majority. Okay. I'll take a motion to dissolve town meeting. Does that receive a second? All in favor? Aye.